Blog Talk Radio.
Tell you that was one of the best series ever on television. The Winds of War.
Herman Wouk. He's a fantastic author, and in a weird coincidence, book club that I'm in right now. Our next read is a book by him that's called Youngblood Hawk. That's what we're reading this month.
Didn't they make that movie?
May have.
Yes.
I don't know if I've ever met.
That was a movie.
I would love to see it because it's a fantastic book.
That
absolutely
was
fantastic.
A
now,
movie.
Not part of his Winds of War and War and Remembrance series, but it's a standalone book. But it's fantastic.
And I think the Winds of War, I think it was 40 hours, miniseries.
Really?
And I think the War Remembrance was about 40 hours, too.
Yeah, I remember those were massive.
And I have both of them on VH.
Yeah, you have that massive video library.
And I normally watch them once a year. And I think I'm going to, since we're playing that, I think I am going to watch it again. Because
I can hear you talking.
You can.
I cannot, but
I don't understand that.
But it's okay.
Let me just see. Make sure that we are. Well, I'm coming.
Are we
up
good?
Digging,
are we good?
Take it down. We're good. We're good.
Okay.
Everybody, you can go get that on. I'm sure on Netflix, and you can go get it at. I guess in. Do we still have those? Places.
They still have, you know, Blockbusters, but now they got Red Boxes. They got all kinds of places. I imagine people
can find
it anywhere. They buy some of these places now. You can actually order, and they will download it to a kiosk near you. You can go pick it up. They'll record it
this
for you. Yeah, they get all fancy nowadays. You can get just about anything.
Boy.
So,
well, The Winds of War, I tell everybody, you need to see it. It's not just, and it talks about World War One. As a matter of fact, it goes like I think it starts like 1905 before World War One, 1907, right. And it goes all the way from World War One all the way through the end of World War Two.
Yeah. So it pretty much sets everything up, tells you why, how, and how it affected lives.
And it's about a family, and I can't think of his name, but he was he went from a captain all the way up to a admiral. When World War II began, they gave him a ship, and he went out in the ship. And it's a love story, but it shows how they get this fictional military man who happened to be in the middle of every single thing that ever happened during World War One and World War Two. He was there I think he came in after the Ferdinand was shot, but he was there every single time.
So
he was there during World War Two. He met with he was there when Hitler was rising to power. He came back after Hitler was rising to power. He went over there and saw Tojo. I mean, it's about him, and it's really great.
Yeah. And just to let you know, if nobody knows it, Robert Mitchum, Ally McGraw, Jan Michael Vincent, and John Houseman, main characters. But it was a 1983 miniseries based on the Corsi classic.
What's the name? Bergman was his wife. What is her name? Polly Bergen. Polly Bergen was his wife. And they have a lot of major stars from Europe, English stars, English actors in it. The guy who always plays a Nazi German. He was in it, and I can't think of his name. But that major stars in it. You will like it, and it's a great film. So I highly recommend it. Now, I didn't even take my. I'm here.
And by the way, even though it's not part of the direct series, still on that war, fabulous movie and book that he wrote, The Caine Mutiny, people should watch.
Oh, well, you got to watch Caine Mutiny if you see both of these.
Yeah. On its own. So anyway, let's talk about you for a second, Mike.
Well, I'm sitting here now.
Because Mike is back. You may know we were on hiatus last week. Mike's trying to destroy his back, apparently. I don't know.
Yeah, but that seems to be fixed. It's now my heart.
Well,
and we're doing check right
we're
now.
We're doing this experiment on Mike.
It's only 109 beats per minute.
See, that's better. It's good. Here's the deal.
I ran 15 miles.
Yeah, Mike's doing this thing where he has long running back issues, but he had a flare up recently of his sciatica and got bad enough that he decided to need some medicine for it or whatever. But now we're exploring the joys of side effects of medicine. So
we're hoping that's only what it is.
Well, I think so. Mike's never been prone to having this massive high blood pressure and everything else, but as soon as he started taking this medicine, went through the roof.
No,
recently.
But the blood pressure is fine. It is my
heart rate. Yeah,
but
it's like you're running a marathon here, man.
Yeah, well, I just did it. It was 109, so we'll check it again.
Well, maybe you've always been a sweaty, panting little guy.
Yeah, I know. Well,
that's a possibility.
The thing, I this is my second shot, lumbar epidural.
Yay, that sounds fun.
Yeah, and it's not as bad as what they say. You know, the people say, oh, my gosh, it's going to hurt. The big needle. Yeah, it was a big needle, but I tell you what, did not feel a thing. And I wasn't asleep either.
So you're saying that we should have more shots in the spine?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Everybody race right out and get a shot in the spine.
Yes, shot
recommended
in the spine.
By Mike.
It's recommended by me, and I highly recommend it. Now, I'm telling you what, getting a shot in the spine, because I tell you what, what it took to get me that shot in the spine. You talk about crying. I cried. I am telling you. I cried almost, it seemed like 24 hours. Things was that bad. It was so severe. I was taking more Oxycontin than
Rush.
Your boy, Rush. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
and it didn't help.
When it gets bad enough that you have to start buying from Rush, you know you're in trouble.
Well, yeah. It hasn't been that bad yet because I stopped with that. But it was 7.5 milligrams by 100. Didn't help me.
Yeah.
He said, what boosted it up? 10 milligrams at 325. Then I had to take this Flexerol with it. And then I was taking gabapentin with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was taking 3 packs of ice my leg was wrapped in. Then I was taking Voltron cream with it.
I remember Voltron. Center of the universe.
Yeah.
The giant robot that can metamorphosize.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. What were you talking about?
That's not the same person. But
yeah.
Anyway.
But here's the problem, Mike. We know that if you just quit doing the Olympics training in your yard, you wouldn't have these issues.
Yeah, well, I wish that's all it was, because I'm telling you, this is unbelievable. The pain, you know, after I got the first shot, I said, well, you know, this is going to work. And I ran around. I did my show that. It was the next day. I did my show next day, just like today. I felt fine. I ran around, did some, went to the store.
That's what you did today.
I went to, next day, I went to a meeting out in, I don't know where it was, out in Union County. Was out there almost all day. I came back. Oh, yeah, because I think it was that horrendous, which you will get into maybe not today, but next week, that horrendous Union County convention. Oh, what a fiasco that was.
Yeah.
Nothing
will make you appreciate national politics like local politics.
Like Union County, horrendous pointed head politics. They're so racist out there. I think they invented racism. Anyway, the thing is that I then went and took, Tuesday night, I think I woke up. My leg was killing me, and I had the most horrible Charlie horses on my thighs, in the thighs. I jumped up in the air out of the bed. I could not, and it stayed. It wouldn't go away. I had put ice on it, and I had it. It stayed there. It felt like a half hour. I know it couldn't have been no more than 10 minutes, and then it came back 3 and 4 times.
Yeah.
The pain was so
well, you've got those bent hairs that are just barring all over your leg, making all the muscles contract and everything.
So then they gave me the Flexanol. They told me to take, they upgraded me with the Flexanol, which is supposed to be a muscle relaxant.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. And
I told you I talked with all my yoga master gurus that, you know, I flew in from Tibet and stuff. But they were all saying that you should do exercise, flexibility, massage, and chiropractic regime, and get off all medicine, and that it would
right.
be better.
Yeah.
You considering anything like that? You just want to go for like
because that's for people who have a little bit of pain. Even somebody had pain like me, you no guru in the world is going to massage that pain out of that I had.
Yeah.
Forget it. Only drugs could have that, or cut off the leg, period.
Just chop it off.
Chop it off. Well,
you know what would
that
be your luck? You'd probably have phantom limb syndrome.
I would have phantom limb. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So what's the deal? Are you going to go for like a
they said that. I asked him about that. I said, am I going to have surgery? And he said, no. He says, normally, we find in most cases like this, the second shot clears it up, and we give one more in the series 2 months later. He says, and what it does, it reduces all the swelling around where it's being pinched, and the nerve can slip out of it where it's being pinched, and you won't have that problem again. He says, now, whether or not it
recurs.
It will, the nerve will slide between those two
vertebrae.
Yeah, this or vertebrae. Again, it occurs that we can't tell, but it most likely it won't occur anytime soon.
Sure.
He says, but you know, and I wasn't going to my chiropractor. I should be going to my chiropractor. So
so this would get back to my gurus that said if you got on a strict regimen of chiropractic and massage therapy,
well, I'm still going 3 times a week
from ever recurring.
So well, that's a possibility. Well, but see, I'm now.
But you're always riding around the countryside to racist counties, trying to fight with people in politics. What's wrong with you, Mike?
I'm on this thing now, where I have what's called a dipulse machine, and it is really, really working. I really like this dipulse machine.
Dr. McCoy on the Enterprise.
No, and I can't think of the name of the doctor. No, I don't have his name out here, but matter of fact, I'm going to see him. He's in South Carolina, mm-hmm. Florence, I think he is, and we're going to be. I'm going to do a show from his office.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to tape him and do a show from his office, and we'll see about that. Now I'm putting in some information in here.
Right.
So
we're going to get talked about these.
What,
these four heroes?
Yes.
These little girls.
Yes, so you want to talk about it?
I've been wanting to talk about that. I think this is just awesome. So I don't know if y'all been following the news. You know, it's hard to get any news in between the squawking IRS, Benghazi bombing, secret Muslim in the White House scream
contest
that we're having. But there is good news going on in the world, and one of them, it did take a good couple of three, four decades. But, hey, we won't argue that point. Good news is that we are finally doing right in this country, and we are honoring four youngest victims, these young girls from the 16th Street Baptist Church,
mm-hmm.
Birmingham, Alabama. Some people may remember this. 1963, there was a bombing there from some KKK members who were convicted of doing so. But these four beautiful young girls were the actual victims of the bombing. They were killed there, where, there was also 21 or so, 22 or something like that, other people that were hurt. But these four girls were actually killed because they were, of course, playing in daycare by the bomb or whatever. But they have finally done right after a very long, sustained push from Alabama, the mayor there, the Congress people have done fantastic. They finally got a bipartisan bill through both houses of our government. This is one of those rare instances where it make you proud to be an American. Everybody worked together. And we have passed a bill which President Obama is signing today to award four congressional gold medals posthumously to the girls that were killed in 1963 Birmingham church bombing. That is going on today, this afternoon, in a remarkable act of closure, I guess you can say, or healing, for the horrors of the bombing. Because, that was one of the, low points of integration and fighting back and standing up, is that we had to suffer such a tragedy. However, mm-hmm. if you can say it in a good way, these four girls became the face of that kind of hatred and bigotry and evil. And it galvanized the whole nation. And so, it may have perhaps drug on for decades more without the horror mm-hmm. of what happened in Birmingham. But I'm very proud of our country for finally doing the right thing. They had already given the congressional medals to the victims of 9/11.
Right.
Like this. But here we are finally going back and honoring those young children in Birmingham. So,
well, I think it's great.
Oh, well, yeah.
I know we also got to mention about the president's boo-boo this morning.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I just wanted to make a strong point because this is something that, finally Democrats and Republicans both, they had unanimous votes across the board mm-hmm. just about, and they are working together to do the right thing and award these victims
and just honor them, you know, for the whole nation. Stand up for one moment and do something right. Before we get back to all the sniping, and speaking of the sniping, that's what you're talking about today. Boo-boo that's just going to be video fodder for Fox News for the next freaking week, I'm sure. But
you know that.
So apparently, Obama going out to Marine One today because he had to go and give a speech. When he was getting on Marine One, you know, there's a Marine that, you know, just like at every door in the White House and everything else, Marines are protecting him. There's one that stands at the bottom of the stairs to get on the helicopter, and they salute each other always in passing. The Marine always has to salute Commander-in-Chief, of course. But he always salutes back. Well, today he's in a rush, and he goes running out there, runs up, jogs up the stairs, gets to the top, and then he goes, oh, turns around, comes running back down, and gives the guy a big handshake and apologizes to him and said, I'm so sorry, I was, you know, racing by and didn't salute you. But we were laughing because, you know, with the
news,
that what they're going to do is they're going to play this clip of him racing by the Marine saluting him. And then they're not going to play the part where he turns right around and comes back down and
shakes
his hand and everything. So they're going to say, you know, here he is again. You know, Marines died in Benghazi, but here's this man who doesn't care. You know,
here's a man
who ignores all Marines. And, you know, it's just kind of unfortunate. It's going to be another week of just like the faux umbrella gate that they ginned up where the where Rainstorm came up and there, you know, the job of these guys is to open doors and to hold umbrellas over any dignitaries that are there and to walk them around and escort them and to do things like, you know, hold the briefcase and all that kind of, that's their duty.
Yeah, like, what's he supposed to hold the briefcase with the codes in it too?
Yeah.
You know, right. Why did he hold his own briefcase?
Why didn't he do that?
Why did he got to have somebody hold it for him?
Yeah, why didn't he have somebody launch the nukes for him? Why didn't he do it himself? Why didn't he just carry a big nuke on his back? Just strap it up. He can be like Iron Man. Come on.
Yeah, Iron Man.
It's just ridiculous. But, again, we saw that this morning. And as soon as we saw it, we were like, oh, great. Here goes another video clip for Fox.
I'm telling you, freaking Fox. These clowns. I'm so sick of these guys now.
If they had real issues or if they could debate real issues in a real way and say, like, hey, you know what? We have a different vision of foreign policy than Democrats, or we have a different vision for economic policy, the domestic issue, That would be fine. But instead, it's endless, you know, I don't know if you want to get into, you know, Alex from Mars, but
we're going to get that. That should be tested
up, endless, like, either completely manufactured things, such as, which we didn't even get to because you were sick, but, you know, just a week or so ago, they revealed that when the White House dumped all of those emails and all of the correspondence back and forth about Benghazi with the ambassadors and everything else, they went, released, edited, and rearranged versions to make it sound as if they were doing completely other things and, like, covering up a crime and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to say that, you know, it's blatantly unethical.
Yes, it's blatantly unethical.
I think it's criminal when you're sitting there, you know, misquoting, rearranging everything else, official documents, and ginning up the appearance of a criminal act. How is that even possible that it's legal? I don't know. But this is their kind of usual operating.
Because crimes don't mean anything to them.
No.
They're the inventor of crimes. Where did crimes just come from? It came from Richard Nixon. I mean, he started the whole thing.
Well,
he loves crime.
You know, they
because crime pays.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like, you know, they just reelected Sanford down in South Carolina when he's like Mr. Appalachian Trail himself. This is a guy, just like Vitter, they reelected Vitter. Both these guys ran on platforms of family values, and they were out in front demanding the resignation of Clinton when he had his...
Vitter was in Congress then. Not Vitter. Sanford was in Congress then, and he stood on the House floor saying that this man's family values are a disgrace and he needs to go.
Yeah.
This is what Vitter said.
By go, he means go to South America and
right,
party with me
on
the...
You know, he can't go with me. I can meet him there later, but he can't go with me now.
It's just unbelievable, though, their hypocrisy, and they do things. But I don't know, fine. See, if they had a real issue, but it's the ginning up and the lying and the
ginning up and
hypocrisy
the lying.
Of it. That's what bothers me. It's
the
just like
ginning up and
stand
the
your
lying.
Ground, have a real issue, but don't sit here and lie and misconstrue and you know, create false.
Why not?
Yeah. Oh, look at this president. He's so lazy, he can't hold an umbrella. I mean, every president since the beginning of time hasn't held an umbrella. But they just come up with these crazy.
He can't
fake.
Hold an umbrella. He can't
but
hold an
umbrella.
Do you
want to get into the crazy fake scandal? Another one that they ginned up this week? I couldn't believe how far they go. But
yeah,
the tornado.
What was that?
You want to talk about the tornado?
Oh. Now, there is a fool who is on the radio only on ultra-conservative talk radio shows. Now, there is a show that comes on at 1 o'clock in the morning, coast to coast. I love it because I like them talking about flying saucers and Bigfoot and all the other stuff, which I know is fairy tale. But when they got to bring in these conspiracy, boneheaded morons that tried to tell you something about that you should know is not true, this isn't like Bigfoot. I saw Bigfoot. I got with a flying saucer. You can take it. You can laugh at that. That's funny. But don't tell me that my government is trying to kill me and I need to get a gun to defend myself against SEAL Team 6 when they come to my door. Because I can't defend myself against SEAL Team 6 when they come knocking on my door. I just say, yeah, okay, take me away. If they don't shoot me. Because when SEAL Team 6 comes, they're shooting you.
Yeah.
They ain't taking you away. They're killing you on the spot.
Well, yeah, but this Alex Jones.
Let me tell you. Now, when we saw Alex Jones.
He's going to step beyond just the.
No, he hasn't. He went on. He saw Piers Morgan, and he wanted Piers Morgan to go to jail, wanted to go back to his country. He shouldn't be saying these things in this country. Not that we have free speech, of course. So he shouldn't be saying it. And you will hear from the president today when he talks about how great free speech is when he gave the woman a code pink yesterday, all the free speech that she wanted. And he said he did not denigrate her after.
Yep.
He did not, like most people would say, oh, yeah, that moron, we're going to throw her out. No,
well,
he said, you know what? She was right.
You remember during the Bush years, they wouldn't even let those kind of people anywhere near.
Hell no.
And even the existing reporters. You remember how rudely they treated, what was that senior lady that's been there forever, and she had let off every question for every.
What is her name?
And then they wouldn't even let her speak, you know.
Right.
During the Bush years. I mean, it's ridiculous. But, no, you know, there's little things, and then there's just crazy. Or as this guy, one of my favorite quotes in here says, if by logical to conclude you mean left alone in a room filled with some sort of gas that makes your brain feel all wibbly-wobbly. The wibbly-wobbly crowd, that's what I'm going to call it.
Unbelievable.
Read that. Okay. So you may have heard or you may have seen on TV that there was a devastating tornado the other day in Oklahoma. It is an absolute tragedy. It is a real event. They've rated it now, I think, an F5 tornado. This thing's a mile and a half wide. It stayed on the ground for 40 minutes, and it devastated several communities. Okay. Luckily, and amazingly, they had a fairly low loss of life and everything from such a devastating effect because they had warning, and a lot of the people could seek shelter.
16 minutes from the NOAA, the National Weather Service,
and you
which they wanted to contract out.
Yeah, and NOAA is another one of the things, by the way, that they wanted to cut funding for. You remember they did cut, I think, the funding for the hurricane planes. They wanted to cut back on the, you know, radar equipment, personnel, and everything else for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is another one of the things, you know, Republicans are like, oh, we don't need big government.
Right.
Maybe one side of that is this. Okay. Alex, Alex Jones, you know, he's the talk show crazy guy. He does conspiracy talk radio all the time. But Now, he's been one of the big ones about, you know, government is big black, secret government is coming to get you. Everything is evil. Everything is hidden from you. You don't know what's really going on. Well, he says the tornado that hit Moore, Oklahoma was a false flag carried off by Obama, okay, using weather weapons.
HAARP.
Now, yes, he talks about HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, if anybody doesn't know. That's the High Frequency Active Aural Research Program that the government runs. It is in the Arctic Circle. It studies the ionosphere of the Earth, and it does have the ability to affect weather and affect the atmosphere because it's a super powerful, you know, it's basically like taking a whole array of radar telescopes or something and beaming them into the atmosphere and see what happens. You know, you can actually like punch holes in the atmosphere and move the ionosphere and stuff like that around. But they're working on these things because, you know, hey, you never know. It might be a need for a Death Star someday. I'm just saying. But anyway, this is one of our, you know, DARPA programs and all, which lends itself to everybody running around screaming. You know, it's the black helicopters, the UFOs of the Air Force are coming. So that said, he is claiming that Obama used this massive weather weapon that can create tornadoes and or hurricanes and or dispel tornadoes and hurricanes. Well, he created some, blew away these people in Oklahoma, devastated their communities solely, I guess, so that he could deflect attention from his Benghazi gate or something. And, you know, he's in such serious trouble and under threat from the Republicans that he needs to blow Oklahoma off the map so that you can have a news cycle. And says what is creating a news cycle. But it's unbelievable. I mean, these are the same guys that claim that if you have to limit your 100-round clip down to only, you know, 30 or 10 or, you know, any sensible amount of bullets, then you're part of the evil government conspiracy to take all weapons.
Now here's the thing. You know, I think I'm going to sue him.
Who?
And I'm going to sue the federal government because they had this. Because I was in, when I was in Vietnam, I wrote a story. And the name of the I wrote a story. It was like a James Bond story. It was called OMS.
OMS.
Organization of Mercenaries and Specialists. OMS. O-H-M-S.
Electrical.
Well, yeah, that's because I was in electronics. We got that little connection there. See?
OMS.
And the star was a secret agent named Mike LaBrea.
Mike LaBrea.
Well, it was sort of patterned after yours truly. But anyway, I got the name from when I was when I used to go and stay with a couple of young ladies that I met when I was in Denver, Colorado, when I was in school, that my aunt introduced me to. They were two teachers living together, and they said, look, when you come to California, we will take you out. You come here on the weekend. I used to go there on the weekends, and they would take me around to all this, to see all the baseball clubs and the parties and you name it. And they lived on La Brea Street, so I got the name La Brea.
Oh, okay.
And the name of the head henchman of OMS was his name was Victor. Let me think now. I'm adjusting my heart band here.
Your cuff. Your cuff. Heart cuff.
It was Vic Paisano. Because I use that because the guys in our dorm were not used to drink a lot of Paisano wine.
Oh, Paisano.
But I got Vic, and he was really. I patted him after our CO. So anyway, one of the things that OMS was doing, they created a weather weapon.
A weather weapon.
And it did exactly what that clown, Alex Jones, was talking about. They would use, but Ohms used it to create snowstorms, or they could do hurricanes. They could do tornadoes anywhere, because you can't have a tornado anywhere. That's why you don't have many of them in Europe, because our atmosphere, in our plane, we live in the northern hemisphere, on our side of the Atlantic Ocean, is more conducive from the west to the east to form tornadoes because of the atmospheric conditions.
Right,
so,
we got the perfect, you know, setup with the mountains
perfect,
followed by planes and blah
right.
blah blah.
And so, and we have the water, which gives it the warm air that it needs.
Because things
we have the cold air coming
that,
from the top.
Yeah,
and
creates a spin.
So, and see, in Europe, they're all closed in. There's no ocean ports. There's nothing. You know.
Yeah.
So.
So basically, this was your.
This is my story.
Bond,
I think
Matt,
they stole it.
Matt
and, you know, I finished the book.
Kind of guy.
And when I left Cameron Bay.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was in Da Nang. I left the whole freaking manuscript here.
What? Like, you're not supposed to leave books behind. Me.
It was
supposed
paper.
To publish them.
It was paper. 160 pages.
So somebody. Somewhere.
Well, it wasn't Alex Jones. I can tell you right now, because that fool has never been in the military. If he ever saw somebody point a gun at him, he would
run
piss and shit in his pants. Please. You kidding me? He's a freaking punk.
The man.
He's a loudmouth.
Spectre.
Yes. So, anyway.
Well, so anyway, we've got... Now, and the funny thing is here, all the, you know, Matt Helm and, you know, spoofy things or executioner-style... plots against the world and America aside, this is real time. These nutbags on the right, they can't let anything go. You know, everything is Obama's fault. And they are saying that Obama personally went out, wiped out more Oklahoma, created tornadoes to deflect the American public's attention away from his, you know, criminality in the White House.
Of course, you know, because, they, you know, they what they that who's the guy that ran? What's his name? You see, he has, see, out of mind, out of sight, out
Which
of
one?
Mind. Who ran for the Republicans? Romney.
Oh, Romney.
Yeah. He won Oklahoma by 33%.
Yes.
So you're.
You know,
no,
and this is another thing I want to put in. Now, this is the other side of this. Forget Alex and his tornado gun, you know, that he's like, you know, no. Dr. Obama. Forget all that crap. But you look at what actually happened. Tornado hit Oklahoma. This is a state that universally rejected Obama. It's a state, every county voted for Romney. The senators and congressmen there all voted against him all
Nut
the time.
Bags.
And they're the ones who repeatedly voted. They have four times or something against the aid for Hurricane Sandy. They voted, you know, what, 27, 37 times to repeal Obamacare, all this kind of crap, right? Despite all of that, Obama turns around and gave them care within hours. He signed bills. He signed full money, full support, full everything, get going, sent the entire FEMA team there and said, you know, fix the entire problem. And then he said, we'll stay and provide any amount for as long as it takes. Okay? In complete contrast to I'm coloring books with Bonzo and heck of a job Brownie down there for, what was it, 4 weeks or something before they even started getting funding down there into New Orleans, you know. Or these yahoos who held up money for the hurricane that hit New York and New Jersey because they're like, you know, you can't. I mean, you still got the guy in Oklahoma still.
Emhoff said.
No, Coburn or whatever said, too, that they wanted to offset the money out of domestic policies.
Emhoff said, well, we're not like those other states because Oklahomians are not going to ask to have any other things in their in the package. It will just be strictly stuff for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Oh, like the people there are asking for it. It ain't the people asking for it.
No. But again, look, when your town and Ukraine has been literally erasured, and there's nothing but slabs left everywhere and all that kind of stuff. You know, the little, we're going to stand firm on partisan lines, and we're going to play politics with Obama, and we're going to, you know, refuse to work with him and sign bills on it. That is the furthest thing from the people's mind. That, you know, they need things like water, you know, blankets, you know, maybe a sleeping bag or a cot to lay their, you know, child in or something. Give me a break. These people are so lunatic. And I just love that the president can turn around, put all of that aside, instantaneously do his job. Well, they don't do theirs.
Instantaneously do their job.
He's just like, you know, you've been attacking me for, you know, 6 years now, and I'm still going to do
that. Let me hear you. This is what Enhoff said. Just listen to this.
Now, Senator, we're going to talk about your book for a minute. You state in your book, which, by the way, is called The Greatest Hoax. We'll tell you how you can get it in just a few moments. But you state in your book that one of your favorite Bible verses, Genesis 8:22, while the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. What's the significance of these verses to this issue?
Well, the Genesis 8:22 that I use in there is, as long as the earth remains, there will be springtime, harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, day and night. My point is, God's still up there. And this is the arrogance of people to think that we, human beings, would be able to change what he is doing in the climate is, to me, outrageous.
Well, that's what he was saying.
He doesn't believe in global warming. Did he say that? I think I hear him say that God created this tornado.
Well,
because you can't change anything
that
God does.
That gets onto another
question. I mean, did God do this? You're going to blame God for this?
Well, that's what.
Blame those morons in Oklahoma who wouldn't have a damn shelter for kids when they're in Tornado Alley.
Right. Now, see, again,
every one of them should have their should be sued up to ye now.
Well, what they should do is have a program instead of another, you know, tax break for millionaires. They should just take care of children and have a mandatory, you know, shelters built in every school and everything else. I mean, should just,
you know, they said, it's not cost effective.
You know, death isn't cost.
Death is not cost effective.
That's what these guys always do. They only think about themselves. What's in it for them?
They said, you know, we're hardy people. We went through the Dust Bowl, and we had people suffer, and we people are going to stay there. And
you know, look,
are these people just stupid?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what you're trying to say? The people of Oklahoma are completely stupid? This is the fourth hurricane to hit more in 15 years.
Tornado.
Sorry.
But, yes, I mean, and they forget all their facts, all their history. You know, the cause of and then corrective action taken to end the Dust Bowl, for instance, was by the government. The Great Depression that came out of the Dust Bowl and all that too, that corrected by the government. You know, these are man-made.
But the problem was, is the government didn't direct the people how to take care of the land, and the people just did the same thing over and over. Never gave the land a chance to redevelop itself, and therefore there was no topsoil. That's what caused the Dust Bowl.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it was a man-made disaster, and it was mitigated and corrected by government action.
That's right.
And that's, you know, again, this is the guy, we survived it. No, you survived because the government came in and stepped in and corrected the problem.
That's right. Correct the stupidness of new people out there in Oklahoma.
I don't want to blame all the people. I'm just talking about the
We're not going to blame all the people. I'm going to show you how stupid this is. Well, I don't know if I can't blame all the people. I want to tell you.
Well, they did.
Here's what happened. There's a small little town south of Moore with 312 people in it. I cannot for life remember the name of this town. They were hit every time Moore was hit.
Right.
The second time they had the tornado hit them, they went out. There's only 312 people in the town. They built a steel and cement shelter that started above ground and went gradually 20 feet below ground that could hold every person in the town.
Right.
When they got the warning, they went into that place the last two times. Their town was completely destroyed. Both towns but not one single person lost their lives.
Right.
Because so what they did now was they built two of these shelters, one completely above ground, cement and steel, and that one is for the children from the school. And now they were both in those shelters, and everybody survived. Now, they were saying that the ground is not cost-effective because the ground is hard clay. We got hard clay out here.
Right.
The only reason why it's hard is because you're so damn dry out there.
Right.
I said, but the problem is, there was one guy they had on the screen who said he built a shelter and it cost him, $1,500 more.
Right.
Now, you can't tell me that's not a cost effective when you're buying a daggone house in Oklahoma for $5.
Right.
Please.
And again,
a three bedroom house for $5.
It's one of those things where there's a will, there's a way. We can build anything, anywhere. In America, we do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, every time they put in a structure in New York, they go down to the freaking bedrock.
Of course.
You know, talking about the hard clay. Yeah, we dug through that 100 feet ago. We're still digging, you know. No, so, I mean, you can do anything if you put your mind to it.
Absolutely.
And these people, they deserve a little bit better representation. They need to get people who care about people, not about profits.
Right.
Because when you start saying, hey, you know what? It's just a few kids that die. It's not cost-effective to dig a hole in the ground for them.
Right.
Screw you. Screw you. Because
they're
digging
a hole. That's right. Bury them, right?
Yeah, they're digging a 6-foot hole.
Right.
They should dig a 60-foot hole.
Right.
So
right.
They should have taken care of it ahead of time instead of after the fact. But again, this is a Republican mantra. They don't care.
They don't care
about people up front.
And they had one of the people from the on the city council. They were interviewing about it. They said, "Well, you think your people that you will now think about building the shelters under the ground?" He said, "Well, you know, I don't know if people want to spend that much money on doing that. Well, we've lived through these before. This is only the second F5 that's come through. So
only the second.
Only the second. The other two were F4s.
Wow. You know,
he said, "What the chances of another F5 is not that good? Gee." Morons. Okay, we got somebody on the phone here.
One quote.
Read this one quote.
Now, this was just funny. From this article talking about Alex Jones, making fun of him.
Yeah.
But I love this one quote because it says, you know, he said that everybody can make a living doing something in America. And he said the fact that this guy is a crazy conspiracy nutbag and is making a living at it.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, well, there's also somebody that's making a living hunting ghosts on TV. So, he said, but if this guy had been an original Jamestown colonist, well, they were starving there the Thanksgiving day. You know, survive. He said all the colonists would just come over to his house and said, "Hey, shut up, nut sauce. Farm something because we're dying here." So yeah. So that's again. Why don't you shut up and do something?
Yeah.
Nut sauce.
Hello there. Who we have on the phone here? Hello there. Caller.
Hey, Mike. It's Frank Deaton.
Frank. Hey.
How are you, man?
Frank Deaton. It's Chairman Frank Deaton from the 9th Congressional District. Congratulations of your latest win and re-election.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, you came in on the end of a political bash that we just had because, you know, you're an elected official. Do you think or do you feel that it's your obligation as an elected official to, serve and help the people that you are elected to, overlord?
Well, the thought crossed my mind, so yeah. I think it's kind of up there in things to do.
I mean, we're just like looking at news of all these poor people in Oklahoma and these guys running around saying, you know, we still are not going to vote for any funds for it, you know, unless you cut Medicaid, Medicare or something. It's unfathomable to us that they wouldn't take preventative measures to help their local people out. I mean, that's their entire job.
I mean, I just could not believe when this elected official said that on television. I don't know. We've gone through two F5s before, and that's a rarity in the last 10 years. but they've had two F-5s and two F-4s in the last 15 years.
Well, I don't care.
Yeah, they
don't
got a bullseye arm or what?
Only had one or two.
Yes.
The fact that he's sitting there, these people are going, it's not cost-effective to
right.
put in shelters for children?
Right.
What a jerk.
Unbelievable.
Oh.
How can you define cost-effective when it comes to human life? I mean, you know.
Exactly.
You know, if we were talking about like in Charlotte or New York City where, it might cost you $10,000 to put a basement in your house. What's it cost out there? 15 cents? I mean, the houses cost $10,000 for a mansion.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you could buy, they got four-bedroom houses on sale there for $2,000.
Yeah.
Because who the hell wants to live in Oklahoma? First of all, I mean, it's ludicrous. No, exaggerating, but it's ludicrous. These people do not care about, they don't care about the people. And what you should have asked them, where do you live, Councilman? I'll bet you he doesn't live on that track that the tornadoes took for the last 15 years either.
Well, I don't really care where he lives. Just wish he would do right by his people.
Yeah.
That's all.
Well, Frank, tell us now.
Yes, sir.
We have a, I think we got a super dynamic chairman of the state party. Randy Bowler, and he's going to be coming on after you guys, checking up on you guys to see what you guys are saying now.
You mean this is being recorded?
That's right. But I think he is probably, I think he's putting his foot in the door to be one of the most progressive chairs we've had in a long time. And what are some of the things in the 9th District that you would like to get done in the next 2 years?
Well, I think one of our main focuses is fundraising, of course. And, you know, we want to work collaboratively with the counties that are within our district. You know, we need to take an entire focus on these legislative races coming up in 2014. You know, and really try to get some viable candidates out there and get them the support they need to throw them over the edge. Because, I mean, it's imperative that we take at least one house of the legislature. I mean, with only one house, you know, you can put a stop to a lot of this stuff, if not all of this stuff, even if you've got a Republican governor and one house that's Republican. So, you know, fundraising is always the key. I mean, everything starts with that. You can't do anything in politics without money. So that's going to be our key focus going forward.
Who do you have that's on the that might be running in the 9th district? Because Sue Myrick's not running again, right? So you guys have that could possibly take that.
Well, our current congressman is Robert Pittenger, and of course we hope to make him a one-term congressman. You know, I'm not sound like Mitch McConnell, but you know, it works both ways. But you know, I don't know if Jennifer Roberts is going to try it again. She did a fantastic job this last time, came closer than anybody to actually, you know, winning that seat as a Democrat. And I believe, you know, the difference she made in the 2012 election, that she's built up enough equity in that district where if she did try again, I think she crossed the finish line.
The Pittenger was in the city council here, I think, and he was – I mean, he's a complete zero. I don't see how anybody – well, you know, so they just voted for him out of rote in the 9th district because it was really nothing. There's nothing he added to the whole scheme of Charlotte when he was here.
Yeah, so, well, you know, Congressman Pittenger, of course, at the time, candidate Pittenger, you know, it's a pretty well-known, you know, fact that he essentially, you know – metaphorically purchased that congressional seat. I mean, he just dumped so much of his own personal assets into that race. I mean, to the tune of probably $2 to $3 million, you know, and the Roberts campaign just couldn't even, you know, compete. I mean, they were probably running a, you know, $1 for every three of his. I mean, you know, so in that sense, you know, if you can't get out there and, you know, retaliate against the negative false advertising that was put out against her, you know, then, you know, it gives him an unfair advantage.
Yeah, yeah. It does give him an unfair advantage. So now, who were the other people elected in on your the 9th district offices?
Sure. Yeah, we got a our first vice chair, which is Ms. Dee Jones, who's very active in the Black Political Caucus as well. We have our second vice chair is new, a lovely lady by the name of September McGrady. She's from Iredell County, very active Democrat. We've got our third vice chair who returned, Mr. Zachary Deason. He's in Mecklenburg County, longtime active Democrat. Our secretary is Mr. Tom Rothrock. He's a new board member. Again, very active Democrat. And our treasurer is returning is Ms. Hattie Hedgepeth. Used to be treasurer of the senior Dems for Mecklenburg County and a lifelong active Democrat.
And what are, you already said that you need, your main goals are going to be fundraising. And now you're in 9th district, and Mecklenburg County has three parts of it. You got the 9th, the 12th, and the 8th district. So,
That's correct.
So, you're going to be very much involved with the new chair, Dr. Grace Liam and Dr. Robbie at Carey. So I guess you guys will be really, which I think, the I used to be the 8th district chair a long time, and I was the first vice chair for the 8th district for a long time. And I always thought that the 8th, the 9th, and the 12th should work together, because so much of that is what Mecklenburg goes the state. And I think if you can win the 8th, the 9th, and the 12th, you have won the state.
Well, you're right. I mean, and there has been in the past what they call some tri-district initiatives. And I'm certainly interested in, you know, reevaluating and, you know, reopening that idea.
Well, yeah. But see, before, I think a lot of it, the people they had in place weren't really, they were suspicious. They want to have their own thing, you know. But this is not how you work. Everybody needs to work together. And when the 8th district has something, I think the 9th district needs to go and help them, and the 12th district needs to go help them. And when the 12th district has something, I think the 9th and the 8th district should help them. And I would like to see none of the three districts have events the same time that would interfere with the other one. And I think that since this is a major portion of the votes in this state of North Carolina, I think sharing that would be a really great deal. But you gotta have the will, and you gotta say, well, I one person is not better than the other person, you know, and
that's right.
You don't want, you know, that everybody. This isn't about the 8th district or the 9th district or the 12th district. This is about the state of North Carolina, and
that's correct.
And I think that's one of the main things that the people need to get into their heads about getting people to vote. There's a major problem down there in that Union County, I guess that's some of it's 9th district, some of the 8th district. Those people down there, they're so petty Annie down there. It is outrageous. It, matter of fact, well, I'm glad the chairman did what he did and took away their voting rights, because that whole thing needs to be redone, because they are not for one another. They, you know, you can't have a sports team playing like they do. You can't have any sort of team playing like they do down there in Union County, because you can't win. You guys, it's up to you guys, but I think that. And now I'm in the 12th district now, because I was rooked out of mind by the redistricting. That's why I had
to draw a circle around your house.
Yeah, I resigned the first vice chair of the 8th district because I was no longer in the 8th district. So, but I think that would be a good way if you guys could come to some happy tune on that.
No, I agree.
You know, we'll see. We got somebody else up here. Who's? Let me see who this is now. Who's this? Oh, we have a new person.
Hello?
Who's this? Yes, Dr. Robbie Carey.
Yes, I have been listening to my fellow district, especially Mr. Frank Deep, who's now like a senior district chair for me. Mike, thank you. Thank you. Being on your show twice helped me. The victory was given to me by the people.
Well, that was wonderful. And I wish I could have been there, but I was laid up with my sciatica. It that night it hit me so bad it was unbelievable.
Well, your spirit was there. There were some good people there, and it was an opportunity for us to also say goodbye to our congressman. He gave an outstanding presentation. It was almost like talking to the family.
Suppose Mel Watt does not if the Senate stays on this, holds up his election. So,
well, you know, he did say that nothing is secure, but you know, he's being positive.
Yeah, he will stay as the representative, right?
Well, he did not speak to that at all. But yes, I believe he would still maintain it, unless, of course, you know, the president could appoint on an interim basis as a acting. Mr. DeMarco was acting director for a long time.
Right, that's true. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so tell us who were the new officers that came in with you.
Oh, yes. Thank you for asking. And again, I want to say shout out to all of the officers in all our six counties that makes up District 12. And I want people to know we have an outstanding board, starting with me, of course, as a chair who've been involved, and Mike, you know, veterans were there for me. I've been involved on the ground for a long time, and I've been in the district work for the last 6 years. So our first vice chair was reelected, Albert Porter from Forsyth County. And the thing that's exciting are the two new vice chairs. One is a young professor, Jamal Fox, from North Carolina A&T. He teaches political sciences. He is involved with Democratic Party work, and he plans to be running for city council in Greensboro. But just an outstanding worker has already been on the ground supporting me. Yes, he's a professor of political. His name is Jamal Fox.
So, what's his position?
He's the second vice chair. Yeah, he was elected second vice chair. And the third vice chair is a young man from Cabarrus, your former area, Cabarrus County. His name is Vival Kalu. He will be in charge of, as the third vice chair, working with me in establishing our social media. And hopefully we can come back and be on your show and talk about how we want to bring the press and especially media to our District 12 materials. We also have the secretary. Yeah. Oh, I should tell you this. Vival's from Cabarrus. Jamal Fox is from Guilford County. Albert Porter from Forsyth. And a dynamic woman, Shirley Hayes, was elected secretary. Shirley is also from Guilford County. The inspiring thing about her, she came to me earlier that day and said, I want to work with you. I've observed you for the last 4 years. Shirley is a greeter at the Charlotte International Airport. She's a retired nurse from New York, Mike. And she volunteers with the Red Cross for disaster relief. So she's a hardcore Democrat, engaging in Democratic values. Our treasurer, was reelected. Her name is Kirby Hurd. She's from Guilford. Kirby has done a great job, and we saw fit to reelect her. We also reelected our Minority Affairs Chair, Carla Cunningham, Representative Carla Cunningham, who did an outstanding job the last 2 years, keeping us informed of numbers, relationship going on in the district with the state party, and I think we're going to even do greater. So I have an outstanding board to start out with, and we're working. And our former chair, who's the mayor of High Point, our chair, Bernita Sims, has just done a great job. She and I have already been on the phone the last 2 days. I will be meeting with her on Monday. She wants to help create a model of transition till we all, because as you said earlier to chairmen from District 9, it's not about us. It's about the party and getting people to vote. Right. So that's what I'm doing. So, and as you are a very influential member in our district, I talked to you when I was on your show before. I want to talk with you about a major role that you can play for us in our district, because we are being swamped with about 10 people who will be running for getting ready to run for the seat. And we want to make sure that we're not showing any bias to any one person. We're not endorsing, but we want to provide information to the district members. And I want to give a special hello to people from Davidson County. They stood with me all the way.
Nice.
Very good. Very
good.
Well,
maybe you can spend time exporting all of that good energy to the Houston.
I think it's something about coming on Mike's show. Mike, you know this. From the last time, I was like, he's like, you're going to win. You're on fire, Mike. My callers, they like it. I like the fact what Mike said, the three districts should somehow pull this. So is the District 8 new chair with us today?
No, she's not with you yet. I don't know where she's at, but she's normally here. So she's
well, we want to give her
Friday guest anyway.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Because, you know, just like they divide and conquer, you unite and you strengthen yourselves.
And you know, one of the things is that the 8th District is the Mecklenburg County part of the 8th District is not what it was. We were the biggest thing in the county before we reached it. But the thing is now that it's just my thoughts at all. When I was chair and of the 8th District, when I became chair, it was in such a disastrous predicament when I became chair. It seems like that when I took over the AAC, it was in a disastrous predicament. When I became the 8th District chair, they were in a disaster. I'm always coming into a disastrous predicament trying to get back on the straight and narrow. But damage control. I mean, you know. But the thing is that I don't know. That's just how I felt. I was speaking to Frank about this a few weeks ago. That I don't think there's any other counties in the 100 counties that are as close as the 8th, the 9th, and the 12th are as far
that's
as
right.
sharing borders. And
that's correct.
The 8th, the 12th districts, they make up the Democratic Party. I mean, if you win the 8th, 9th, and 12th districts, you win the state.
That's correct. That's correct.
And I think that it would be a major deal to have the 8th district help out the 12th district and the 9th district help out the 12th district. The 9th district have the 8th district and the 12th district help them out for when anybody's running for office and fundraising. I think that Mike said, hey, the major thing is going to be fundraisers, and that's going to be fundraisers on all three of these counties.
That's right.
But you know, the problem is the elected officials. They are the ones that make it difficult because they are greedy and they only want their people in their district helping them.
It's always
that's right.
It's them. And it, see, it's not about them. It's about winning.
It's about winning.
It's about winning. It's not about the elected official, because if everybody wants to win, the elected official will win.
Right.
But if you have a lot of these, and this is, you know, this is not the same thing that I see in New York City politics. And I'll go to that. I'm going to New York City politics, because that ain't how it works in New York City politics. Everybody from everywhere helps out everybody. Nobody stays there. Best things for, or the best money, or the best guns for their people. I mean, because you, the idea is winning. And I think that if there was some way that, but you guys got a major, major push to convince the people in your district that that's the way they should go, though. So, hey, you guys are going to have to do that.
Well, I think that Frank, being like one of the senior members, leaders of the district chairs, and we all have known each other and worked very close. I've worked very closely with Frank for years. Right, Mr. Chairman?
That's correct.
And I think
and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
I think that we come out of the Charlotte Healthcare Coalition. And with people like some of the people on your board, and with people like Representative Carla Cunningham and Dr. Grace, who's been involved with healthcare, we have that bonding, Mike, before. So it's easier for us to pull, you know, strategies together to work together. We really do. And I want to, I think this is a new day. We have a tough campaign coming up for 2014. We want to make sure we keep the Senate seat in the Democratic column, and it's going to take everybody fighting for that.
It's going to take everybody. That's absolutely correct.
I don't know if you heard on the news that Tom Tillis has already created a super PAC.
Well, did you expect anything, Tom Tillis? Did you expect anything less?
Well, he's creating that to try to run for the U.S. Senate. So
I put the same category as I put Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. You know, he's
waiting for
a tornado, the Obama tornado, to rip through another state.
it's quite obvious, but if Alex is telling the truth, if he has that weapon, wouldn't he have just used it on Congress or something?
I would have run it right down Capitol Hill. I would have set it just down the street where Vader. I mean, come on. You know, it's not good. I asked Frank, what is your main focus that you are looking to do to get accomplished next 2 years? Dr. Robbie?
Oh, I thought you were addressing Mr. Deaton. Well, I have three main focus that I put forth and I would like to work on. One is the first one, bringing the different counties together. And within the next, I'm putting together a 100-day plan. And within the next 60 days is to have a leadership group from each county, six counties, to meet in the middle so we can begin to look at each other and realize we have to work. We're not separate. We are under the Congressional District 12, and everyone's vote makes a difference, whether you're from Davidson County to Cabarrus to Mecklenburg. That's my first thing. I've already appointed someone from Davidson County who's willing to help push that together. The third vice chair from Cabarrus, he is going to work on that. And we have Guilford, to not just the people that were elected, but other people who are involved in Democratic grassroots leadership to come to that. And out of that gathering, I want to look at identifying all the colleges and universities in District 12 and linking them up through social media, as well as our seniors in District 12 and our housing authority locations. Many of the people that are in housing are very active Democrats, but they have never been engaged. And the reason they haven't been engaged, because as you said before, Mike, people tend to think their vote, they just vote, but what they have to say doesn't matter. And we're leading all of that to a town hall meeting. I think it's important that we get our people engaged and knowledgeable so that whoever's going to run for that congressional seat, the people will be aware of what they need to do. And we need to raise money. We have very little in our treasurer, and we're looking at some ideas. Hopefully I can get the chairman from District 9 to write a check and loan us some money.
I'm sorry, Robbie, you're breaking up. I'm sorry.
Oh, I bet I am. So we might be doing a telethon on your radio for a project, saving the, you know, but we have to, because you can't do very much with no money. And that has been the problem with all of our districts. We have focused on the counties and left the district to kind of wither. And so those are some of the things. And I've talked to my board. They are all excited about it. And we want to work with the county chairs. Again, we have some county chairs that are very open. They've reached out to me. I've reached out to them because we want to ensure all the precincts are organized in District 12. You know, in Mecklenburg, I hate to say it, but Mecklenburg has been lax in getting precincts organized.
You think?
And so, yes. So I'm working very closely with Mark Freeland. We've assigned people. Matt Newton has volunteered to be on board with District 12 to help Mr. Freeland, who's the first vice chair in the county, as well as people like John White and others. So we're getting people, even someone from District 9 volunteered to help us get our precinct, Ms. Rosa Mustafa. She lives on the west side. So the key is people are jumping in to make sure precincts get organized. As a district chair, that's not a direct link. It's a link, but my goal is to help the party, you know, achieve that by assigning people from our district to work with them.
I think
you think that's enough to get started in 100 days?
I think so.
Sounds like a good plan.
179, 199 precincts in Mecklenburg County? How many, Frank?
Oh, gosh. What is it?
I think it's about over 200.
Actually, yeah, maybe at this point,
I think it's almost 200.
And I think it's like 180 to 190, somewhere around there.
But you're right. Many of them are not organized in the 12th. I don't know about the 9th.
The 77 that were organized, or 66?
I was 60. For the county convention, I think we only had 67, right?
Something like that,
So, I mean, that's the lowest I've ever seen it.
Absolutely.
I mean, when who is his name? He's out in California now. Mike was the. Mike Evans. We had 199 organized. I mean, because I was there. So, and we haven't had that many since he left.
And it was very active then.
It was very active.
People were active. Yes.
Right.
I came in on the tail end. You all were active. And, there's a lot of change since that time. I'll let our famous District 9 person speak to that. We've had a lot of changes.
There has been, that's for sure.
But change is good. change is hard, but it's good.
If you don't get worse than what you were.
Yeah, that's what I was
going to
say. Positive change.
Positive change is good.
Okay, I'll accept that. I think with the new election of, the re-election, of course, of Chairman Deaton and District 9, and the new elections of both Dr. Grace and District 8 and myself, it is going to, it's already swept in a real positive change. Because we all, you know, know each other. We may not agree, but we disagree in a positive way, and people are feeling excited about it.
Well, what do you think about having the new, really completely, almost completely change hands, the new party structure in Mecklenburg County? I think that's going to affect, Frank. I think that's going
to
affect.
I'm very pleased to see the new board. I mean, I think they got a great team. You know, they got some very qualified people. You know, and like I say, it's a different strategy than perhaps, say, what we had, because now the challenge we face is with OFA gone, essentially, and not knowing if we'll even ever have a machine of that sort to actually assist us in our local elections. It's really become incumbent now upon the local party to do more than they ever have in the past to compensate for what we're not going to have when we had OFA here. So, you know, and I think we've got the right people to do that. But again, you know, it's about, a large part of it is about getting precincts organized, but to the point where they're not organized just on paper. And that's the trick. You got to get them organized with people who want to work and actually grow their database within their precinct and make sure their registered Democrats in their precincts are getting out on Election Day and voting. That's the main purpose of organizing precincts, not just to say, hey, we have a board and precinct, whatever. You know, that's all and fine, but if they don't, you know, actively participate in the process, you know, they might as well remain unorganized. So that's going to be, a great challenge for this new board to get those numbers up with the right people, you know, but I think you got the right people on the board, on the county board, to make that happen.
Right. Yeah. I'd like to add to what Frank said. I am very, very pleased with the new board. I think our chairwoman, Bradford, is going to do a great job. And she, not only with her, but Mark Friedland, the first vice chair, and Jeff Jackson, he is just phenomenal. He's a social media person. As a matter of fact, I plan to ensure that the third vice chair for District 12 reach out and get some guidelines and work with Jeff on some of the things he's doing. We have a dynamic treasurer. She is, I feel a lot of confidence with her, and I think anyone listening can say for the first time, if we can help this party, this is the time, because we have someone who not only is licensed, right, Frank, with finance, but knows how to make sure it goes to the proper place.
Oh, yeah, she's got an excellent background in financial services, and she's highly educated, you know. I mean, she's well-spirited, so it's Paula Harvey is our treasurer. And,
Paula Harvey.
Cynthia,
for the treasurer of the county.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She's on the board with Robin Bradford, the chair of the county. And Cynthia Wallace was reelected as the second vice chair over training. And Cynthia has already reached out to us on District 12 on helping to set up some training in terms of precinct, again, much like what Frank just said. You can get organized with five people, but it's not organized. You have to get organized in the community, reach out to neighborhood presidents, other groups, clubs, associations, schools, universities. Now you have a precinct that will be prepared to vote. And we have clear goals. Hold the blue line. We've got blue line.
That's right. And, of course, too, you know, we need to make sure and focus on our underperforming majority Democratic precincts. I mean, where you've got just, you know, you're flooded with voters, but you got to get the turnout up. You know, if they're underperforming, that's where it's an easy way to focus because you've already got the people there. It's just getting them out and turning them out when you need them to.
Well, the thing that happened this time is a very poor showing at the university. With the students. They did not come out.
That's exactly right. And that's why I'm focusing on in District 12. And, Frank, you might want to, we can talk about that later, but the students, students who are in high school who will be turning 18, for example, this graduation, we should have, I would hope the county or someone would have voter registration drive during graduation, because mm-hmm. many of those students are turning 18, and if you don't mm-hmm. catch them then, they're gone.
Things, though, that we all have to pay attention to. You don't need any more people. You need just the people who are registered to vote. And
yeah.
All right, Dr. Robbie, forget voter registration. That's off the table.
Forget voter registration.
So.
Let's just get the ones who are already registered to vote. But you know, Mike, we still got to get the younger ones. Each year, you got to make sure you turn them in, get them registered. But you're right. You are right. Get the ones that are registered to vote.
It's just like the Republicans now say, oh yeah, well we need to get these Hispanics. We need to get them because we have their hearts and minds. It's too late for that. It's too late. The horse already left the damn barn.
Right.
No matter how many Hispanics or people around the country can get to vote. People who are here now that are having babies who are turning 18 in 2 years, 3 years, it's too late. They will never win back. So, and what I'm saying to you right now, yes, that's true. You're always going to go to be registered. But I'm telling you, if you've got half the 5,000 people at the university right down here on North Tryon to vote last time, one of these house seats. But we don't. Because is that the 12th district next to the 9th district? Is the University UNC too? Is that the district? Is that 12th?
Well, it's split. I mean, some of it's in the 9th, some of it's actually not. So that's kind of where our border is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, UNCC, that's in District 12.
Part of it is.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
It's now in District 12.
5,000 that are there on campus, you might have another 2,000, 7,000 students are there, and only 5% of them voted.
Exactly. Well, you're
really
right. Matter of
crazy.
Fact, that is Representative Carla Cunningham's House District 106. And
so,
you remember last time they didn't even want to put a early voting site there because they knew it would get a lot of students.
But the problem is that should be fought because since I have been here in North Carolina, they've always had that as a voting site on campus.
Okay.
On campus. The students on campus to go right on campus. Why did Because we never did anything about the right. And that means every single thing that they want to do. We cannot let them just say and do what they want to do. Because they will do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. I mean, you don't let somebody slap you in the face. And just because you stand up. I mean, if that's the case, the young lady would have went to the back of the bus, but she didn't.
The thing is, everybody has to keep their eyes on the ball and keep moving it forward, or else we're going to, exactly like what happened this time, we're basically going to end the 18th year. It's an even battle. Boring, but if we don't motivate even the existing,
right?
So, we just lost just like we did. And just like she said, if we aren't invigorating and bringing in and educating, there won't be. They just keep chopping at the tree until it makes it small. I mean, it's what, they limit your access to voting. They make it more difficult. They make it, they put every stumbling block. You know what? They need to try harder.
Right, and some of the things that I would suggest that I'd like to see done, which the Democratic Party has not done since Michael Evans was here, is to have a monthly report on how government works, how a bill becomes a law.
Right.
Why do you need to vote? And what does it mean when you don't vote? That Poe Tinker said to the president, you pay, why don't you take that close council? Why don't you vote the president that close council? You pay the Congress that can do that. And people say these stupid things. It gets me so, it infuriates me when they say stupid things like this. And that's different. They don't know. The president doesn't have any power. He don't have superpowers. He's just a good job right now. When do you need the money when the Congress hasn't appropriated? He's just saying they'll be blue in the face. It ain't going to happen. Oh, yeah. Why don't you fire them people at the IRS? The civil service, you can't fire them. It takes about almost a year to go through a trial. I mean, that's why he couldn't fire a learner. I mean, it's that people don't know these things, and we need to educate the public. The public doesn't know crap because we don't teach civics anymore in school. You know, we give a cursory view of it, and then we expect the students to remember it. I had 6 months of it when I went to school.
Yeah.
Just six.
So, one of the additional jobs for all of these county chairs and district chairs and everything else is they should, just like we're talking about, Mike Evans, run their own class. Yeah. No, because, you know, the school doesn't want to do it. And we need to have it. Because it's here.
That's right.
We're losing races and stuff when people are just giving up and don't, you know, say, well, they don't have it anyway.
Yeah. Well,
told all day long.
Right. Yeah, you're told all day, it don't matter. Right.
And you're saying, duck down because Obama's building a tornado gun. Oh.
Right. You know, but what do you kids think about that? Having some sort of, and you know what? I really think that it should be generated by the state party. I think they should put or should start a program where they do this, and or the state party should help the districts do this.
Okay.
And help enable them to do this, because we're not going to have educated voter unless we educate them.
That's correct.
People don't learn anything in a vacuum.
Yes.
They don't learn.
Hey, Michael.
Go ahead.
Michael?
Yes.
Yeah, Michael, this is Frank. I just want to, it looks like I'm about to lose my signal on my phone. So I just want to make sure I had a chance to tell you thank you so much for having me on the show. And it was an absolute honor to be on here with you guys. I just didn't want to drop out without you knowing.
We're going to have some.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
My signal has been going in and out. I don't know if you could hear me.
Okay. All right, Frank.
Hello?
Frank?
Okay. Frank, did Frank drop out?
I'm here. I can barely hear you.
Oh, you're still there? Oh, okay. Yeah, my signal, if you notice, I was quiet. I couldn't get in, and it was going in and out. But I want to say thank you so much, Chairman.
No problem.
Frank, I appreciate you so much. You've done a good job, and I want to work with you and study and learn with you as well.
Well, you both
thank
back.
You very much,
I want to thank both you guys. We're going to have you both back, and I want to see what you're doing to help educate your district. And when I get Randy Bolo, he's already calling in, I'm going to ask him. I'm going to present this to him.
Yep. We got to help voters themselves.
Straight. Got to help voters.
Okay. Well, Mike, thank you so much. Thank you for giving me another chance, okay? I love it, and I'll be talking with you soon. And get well.
Thank you, guys.
Stay well. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take
guys.
Care. Thanks.
Okay, we are...
Which gets back to our core problem in America, education, and the lack thereof.
You know, it's so ludicrous. I mean, you wouldn't be able to have people on who did not know what the heck is going on in their own party.
No.
They have no idea what's going on in their own party. People don't know what the president could do, what the speaker... The speaker house is talking through his eyeballs.
Yeah.
I mean, he just says things that, I'm going to have... I'm not going to stop until... with that piece where he says here, John Bona. John Bona. John Bona is.
It depends on if it's cocktail hour or not as to what he's saying.
Oh, yes. Well, let me just play that for a minute. Just a minute. Listen to this.
Today is a new day, which means that we're sure to get a new story from the White House on the IRS scandal. White House was made aware of it last month, yet no one thought that they should tell the president. Fairly inconceivable to me. We are going to continue to seek answers until we get to the truth.
What?
As I said last week, I'm not interested in who's going to resign. I'm interested in who's going to jail.
Now, that is the most stupid, idiotic statement any moron. Yeah, I expect something like Alex Jones to say that. There is no, there has not been a crime committed here. If not one single one of these people ever got their 501c4s put through, it wouldn't be a crime. They could take up and tear their 501c4 submissions and throw them in the garbage. It ain't a crime.
Do you want me to
read it? No. Hold on. Because right now we have on the phone, and who is this on?
Michael, this is Randy Voller, chair of the North Carolina Democratic Party.
How are you?
Mr.
Chair.
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Besides getting an epidural shot, my second one, and having my heart, let's see, I just checked it. It was 114 beaten, and I'm sitting still. I had nothing to drink. Everything else is fine.
Yeah. we're just having this debate, and maybe it's a perfect time for you to come in because we just talked to a couple of, our local political leaders, and we were emphasizing the
12th and the 9th district chair, Dr. Robbie Carey and Frank Deaton.
And we were just talking about helping voters help themselves and, doing everything we can to get out the vote and not only get out the vote, but also to educate voters and to make them aware of how and why and, government itself works and what they can do to participate and why it's important to participate and, how the process goes.
I was just talking to Frank and Dr. Robbie about the students over at UNCC. I mean, there's probably about 7,000 students over there. I think only 5% of them voted. I mean, it's great to have to get out the vote all over. You always need that, but we need the people who are already registered to vote, and I think there needs to be a different sort of project for them to get them on board. And I think, as I told both of them, I think you are a breath of fresh air that this party has needed for so long. I can't even remember. And one of the things that I like to see is to have maybe once a month or every quarter have a district wide a program on what is our democracy. Why should we vote? How a bill becomes a law. And we wouldn't fall in and listen to these stupid things like what John Boehner said, well, I don't want to find out what's going on. I just want to send people to jail. Well, there has been no law that has been broken. Just because a 501c4 has not been approved, and I don't care if they tore up every one of them. There is no law, federal law or state law or city law, that they can charge this learner woman with. The only thing they can get her with is tricking her is to talk, because if she pleads the fifth, there ain't nothing they can get her on. Because there's no law.
Right.
So, but they're making everybody think that those laws have been broken. And laws haven't been broken. So, and with people, we have our own Democrats that think laws have been broken. Oh, it's horrible. Well, that's a lot of garbage.
Michael, I think that the people need to understand that the purpose of government is to create a more just society.
Correct.
And that that these laws are made by men and women, and they're supposed to be made in a deliberative fashion. And right now in Raleigh, they're not being made in a deliberative fashion. They're being brought in here from groups like ALEC and others, and they're running through there like as quick as possible, almost like a legislative blender, and here you go, the cocktail out the other end.
Right.
I mean, these laws, we make these laws. They're laws by the people, of the people, and frankly, people become obsessed with using this as a way to divide folks up. If our Congress wants to do good for America, it needs to be concerned about investments in our communities. People need jobs. People need to feel that their communities are working. They need to be focused on that and not scoring cheap political points.
Yeah, when is the last jobs bill the North Carolina Congress has put through?
There is no jobs program, and that's one of the elements of, you know, as a leader of the Democratic Party that I'm pushing, that we need our money in this state to invest in our communities. So the idea that the Republicans would eliminate or cut significantly the North Carolina Rural Center is a horrific idea, but they're just blithely going along with it. You realize the Rural Center has put money, whether it's in the form of grants or loans, out to over 85 counties in the state. And as a mayor in a rural county, I have worked with them and been on the receiving end of grants or low-interest loans that have improved the water and sewer distribution network, as well as the water and sewer plants, and those improvements created jobs. There's a multiplier effect with that. And those are jobs that real people have that put money into the community.
And what about you? I'm sure you guys, you had bridges out there, too. Well, what were you, what city were you, or the city or town were you the mayor of?
I'm the four-term mayor of Pittsburgh, which is one of the oldest towns in the state. It's in the middle of the state in Chatham County. We're a growing community, just like communities around Mecklenburg where you are. But we have very old infrastructure, and one of the problems all across America and in North Carolina is that leaders have been punting down the road or kicking down the road, fixing some of these water and sewer lines and other infrastructure and hoping that someone else will have to foot the bill or make the decision. And when I ran in 2005, I said, we are going to fix this and you are going to have clean water. So that's what I focused on doing, and we did it.
Why were these people, why did these people punt down the road? I mean, what is the reason for
it's this? Pretty simple, because in order to actually fix these things, you know, utility funds for towns and cities are run as an enterprise fund, so they have to run like a business. At the basic minimum, they have to break even. But people decide they don't want to raise rates and bring in more revenue, because raising rates might mean that somebody that they know might pay a little more money, and they don't want to raise taxes on the other end. So if you run an environment where you don't want to raise the revenue required to invest in it, you won't have the cash flow necessary to pay for a low-interest loan. It also takes a little bit of work to actually apply for these programs. But if you've got people who care, and that's why you were talking about elections, the real problem in our society is that most of the people do not understand that the most important elections and the most important elected officials that they need to be working on are in their counties. They need to be electing county commissioners. They need to be electing sheriffs. They need to be electing people to soil and conservation, people to the school board, and people to the municipal leadership that are going to make investments in their community. But we kicked that down the road. So you're saying, why aren't people voting? They somehow have lost the connection.
Well, you know, the thing is that to me, whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, if you want to stay in office, wouldn't it be good to help the people? Because aren't they the ones that vote for you? The millionaire that's giving you $1 million for your fund to run, he's only got one vote. But you need more than one vote to win. I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, because I want to win every time I ran. And if the people like me because I help them, and in other words, help the structure of the city, not just help them out when they need a job, one person would come to me, but help everybody in my town or township, it would seem that, I don't know, it just seems convoluted to me that you wouldn't want to help make your township better than it was when you got there.
It makes sense, Michael, but the problem is that if you go talk to young people, for instance, they don't really understand the connection between local officials and the life that they live. So they don't directly make that connection that, oh, if I want a community center built, I need to pay attention to who's running for city council or who's running for county commissioner.
Mm-hmm. Well, how can we then, what is the meaning or what needs to be done to get these young people in more involved? And see, one of the things I was saying that that they don't understand that, so I was going for the that maybe the party needs to have a quarterly or a monthly hour and a half instruction on why do you need to vote and why do you need to be particular about who you vote for.
Yeah, I think voter education is incredibly important so that people understand the values that they're voting for. You know, a lot of people have this kind of misshapen idea that you need to, quote, balance things, and they think of politics as like making a stew, for instance. So they'll say, well, you know, I'll vote for Joe over here because he seems to have these values, but to balance them out, I'll vote for Johnny over there. They don't understand the ideological connection to how decisions are made. They're thinking of it as, well, you know, I'm cooking a cake or I'm baking a cake. I mean, the real issue is Americans are not as connected to their civics as they ought to be. And what I want to do as the chair of this party, and I'm going to do, is I'm going to bring forward something called Democracy Revival, which you've heard me mention before, and we are going to go on the road, and I play music, I'm a drummer, we're going to bring music and we're going to bring education all over the state. And I've already recruited Ben Chavis to help me and others. We're going to go around the state and we're going to take back this idea that spirituality only belongs to the right wing. We're going to take back this idea that the Constitution and freedom only belong to a few people, and we're going to educate folks that democracy needs to be revived in your own community.
Absolutely. Very similar to what I was saying, that
he's going to educate people and make it fun to learn.
And make it fun to learn, right.
Exactly. Right now, gentlemen, the problem that you see with the Democratic Party amongst a very small group is they put the fun in dysfunction. I want to get that out of this party. You know, they would rather pick nits and throw, mud pies at me and others instead of focusing on our true opponent, which is a very radical and extreme minority of the Republican Party that is essentially running an agenda that's adverse to almost every North Carolinian. And we have folks that are more concerned about a very small agenda for themselves than enhancing what I would consider democracy for all. I mean, there are a lot of people that don't want people voting because they're afraid that once you educate the voters that they'll be out of power. It's my view that an educated voter is a good voter. I want citizens to know why they're getting involved in democracy. I mean, they need to understand what their vote means, and then they need to use that vote.
Well, what you just said, I'd like you to hear, just listen to this for a minute.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, that was said by Paul Weinrich, who's the father of the Republican Conservative Party. They don't want everybody to vote. They want less people to vote, and therefore they will win all the time.
Yes.
That's a simple. And this is but what you're saying is absolutely true. And I put it to Frank and to Dr. Robbie that one of the things that I'd like to see is the 8th and 9th and 12th districts in Mecklenburg County, we're so synonymous and we're so close to one another. I would like to see both of them, and, you know, it's difficult, it's great to say, but it's difficult to work, where each one of these districts helps the other one out. When the 8th district is having a function, everybody from the 12th and the 9th district should be helping them with that function. And when the 9th district has their function, everybody from the 8th and the 12th should help them. And vice versa for the 12th district. Because Mecklenburg County, if you win Mecklenburg County, all three districts in Mecklenburg County, you're going to win any race in this state.
Michael, you're correct. If they should be all kind of rowing from the same side here. And
absolutely.
That's what our people need to be doing. And they need to understand that politics is a lot like playing in a band. I'm a drummer, or, you know, playing on a basketball team or a football team or any team sport. You know, everybody has a role. There can only be one lead singer and one lead guitar player and one, you know, guy doing the solo, you know, as a saxophone player. I mean, everyone has to know what they're meant to do. But if we don't come together that way, then the music doesn't sound good. And if it's not in tempo and off key, the people aren't going to like it.
Absolutely.
That's why you're right. They have to come together and be on key and be on tempo.
Well, you know, one of the things that can be an impediment to this is it's, and I frankly, I say it, the selfish elected officials, because they don't think that way. They only think me, 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 me. And it's about me. It's about the state. It's about winning the state and winning your district. And the more people you have help to win and to help you with your district, the more greater chance you have of winning. And our elected officials need to stop being so me, 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 and say, look, I'll help this person in the 8th district if I'm in the 12th district run, and let them help me when I'm running. And, but they don't. It isn't that way.
Michael, what people, I think, who are in elected office need to do, and this is one of the reasons that I'm somewhat controversial, is you're not elected to be reelected. You're elected to actually serve the community, to serve the people, to serve the civic interest. So if you have to make tough decisions that are not popular but are actually going to be best in the long run, you need to do them. You need to make the tough votes. And you know, leadership is about doing that. It's not putting your finger in the air and doing a focus group and wondering where you should go. If that's how we worked, we'd still believe the world was flat. If you read the Bible, you'll know that the Israelites wandered around the Sinai for 40 years worshiping false idols and listening to everybody but who they should listen to. And when they finally focused and realized they need to go to the Promised Land and fight the Canaanites, and Joshua took them there, they got the Promised Land. So if the Democratic Party wants to follow, you know, false leaders and they want to worship false idols and wonder how they got there, they're going to be out of power a very long time. Once the party decides where it wants to go, it will get there.
Well, you know, but what do you think was the problem, why we lost control for the first time in 125 years?
Well, I think that, number one, when you're in power so long, you develop, you know, certain habits, and you're probably becoming disconnected, as you're referring to, of a changing demography in the state. You've got a growing Republican Party that is just itching to get back into power, and you're probably not recognizing that the demography is changing, and you're going to have to change message in the way you do business. I mean, look. This country is becoming a country for the Democratic side of the Obama coalition. Obama has shown this now in two elections. That will be the emerging coalition for the Democratic Party. If you're not willing to recognize that, then you need to get out of the way. Mm-hmm. It's going to play in this state like it's played everywhere else.
Yeah.
It's obvious. It's just people refuse to recognize it. You know, they're going to have to share power. They're going to have to share ideas. They're going to have to pool together money, and they're going to have to do things differently than it's been done in the past. That's why.
Well, you know, and you're right, and if Larry Kissel would have realized that, he'd still be in office. But he didn't. I can tell you that right now. But he didn't want to. So, you know.
I'm tired of hearing that because I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to go back anymore. Let's go forward.
Let's go forward.
Absolutely correct. But you're absolutely correct, Chairman. You're absolutely correct. And how are we going to matter of fact, let me ask you this. How did the other 100 counties fare out in their district meetings? Just recently on the 18th.
Well, first of all, I'd like to let the other person speak up. I'm not sure who I'm on the phone with, but they're trying to say something. They need to say something.
My senior producer, he's on.
Thomas Wardberry, yeah. I'm always here. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I agree with your producer that we have to be forward-focused, so, you know, we're not going to go back and try to, you know, kind of dig up bones in the graveyard and try to divine things from that. At this point, you know, it's happened. I think right now your question is about how the districts turned out. There are 13 congressional districts, so they're set up all over the state. I visited the 9th, the 10th, and the 11th. So I was in Charlotte, I was in Shelby, and then I went all the way out beyond Asheville to Clyde, North Carolina. And then on the same day, I went to an LGBT event in Guilford, and then I went home and played music. So it was a long day for me.
22? Did you have an F-22? How did you get around?
I have a really lovely wife that wanted to spend some time with me, so I got up at 7 in the morning, and we drove all over the state, and I got home at about 9:30, and I do a mayor's jam at my house a couple times a month. I have a stage, and I'm a musician, and invite people in. So I got home, and I played music till about 1 in the morning to kind of relax. But how I did it is I did it the old-fashioned way. I drove.
Well,
you know?
I tell you that, when I ran for the first time for the AAC chair, I drove, had to be about 3,000 miles up and down North Carolina. And I used to take, most of the time, I would go there on a Thursday or Friday, and if I went there on a Thursday or Friday, I went there on a Friday, then my wife would go with me. So, and we spend the night there or the weekend there in the town we were at. So I know how it is, and she says, "Well, gee, I mean, are you ever going to be here on the weekend?" Well, you know, what can I say?
Not really. But no, you're on the move. I mean, the conventions went well. We had some changeover in leadership. Dr. Galloway became the new 8th district chair. Dr. Ahiri became the new 12th district chair. Wayne Abraham, longtime chair in the 6th district, was replaced by Chris Scrow. I reappointed him back to our council. He's served this party well. But, you know, I thought that the districts that I attended were well attended, and that people really wanted to hear an affirmative message about training in their community and how we can visit their counties and invest in their communities as the county, as the state party, and actually build infrastructure that will help them win elections. My message, and that's what we're hearing. I actually have to go, Michael. I've got someone in the office here. But
I'd like to have you on, once a month if you can, to give us a little 5 minutes. If you spend 5 minutes, that's all you need. You just give us what the lowdown is, or give us the chairman's message.
I'd come on once a week if you'd like. I think that people should hear from the Democratic Party all the time. And if you want me on once a week for 5 minutes, I'll come on once a week and give you a good message. And then you bring people on. I'll answer questions. I'm open and accessible for the people, Michael.
That will be fine with me. Once a week will be fine.
So you just let me know. Thank you very much.
I'll settle it with you. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Randy,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was pretty good. And what is this? You're still... I pronounced my... Well,
so anyway, that is an active chairman that I'd love. I'd love to
hear
from.
Let's
that
see.
Is amazing.
Let's see who is
this.
Do you
get the sense that he's going to get things done?
Well, I think so. I don't know. We have another. Hello, who's this? Hello. Hello. Okay, you don't have nobody there. There is now. Hey, if you would have heard. Did anybody out there hear Mr. President Obama's speech? They're calling it the speech yesterday. The speech. He took everything apart. And it's the first time a president actually gave the American people his actual thoughts, his thinking, how things should work. Normally, you don't hear that from a president.
Right.
They just do it and bingo, it's done.
Right.
But he went down and wanted to, hey, look, I want to tell you how it works. And let's see if I don't know why we keep getting this 1111. I don't know what that is for, but
hey,
who's this?
I've been playing the correlation game with a lot of sports shows. You want like I say the word, you think of the first thing that comes to your mind.
And who's this?
If I say Floyd Mayweather.
Okay, good. Anyway, Floyd Mayweather. All right, now. Let me go back to this thing here where we had the president. The president presented a few things that people need to understand about why we are in the predicament. Or where we're at, I shouldn't say in a predicament, but why things already are with the drone strikes.
Right,
he was
talking
about the drone strikes,
yeah,
and he was talking about
the nature of the wars we're in.
Nature of the war.
And why he prefers to use them.
The way he prefers to use them.
Right.
And let me just give you this.
Our commitment to constitutional principles has weathered every war. And every war has come to an end. We must define the nature and scope of this struggle, or else it will define us. We have to be mindful of Jay Madison's warning that no nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. We must define our effort not as a boundless global war on terror, but rather as a series of persistent, targeted efforts to dismantle specific networks of violent extremists that threaten America. A perpetual war through drones or special forces or troop deployments will prove self-defeating. and alter our country in troubling ways. Our systematic effort to dismantle terrorist organizations must continue. But this war, like all wars, must end. That's what history advises. That's what our democracy demands. Given my administration's relentless pursuit of al-Qaeda's leadership, there is no justification beyond politics for Congress to prevent us from closing a facility that should have never been opened. Today, I once again call on Congress to lift the restrictions on detainee transfers from Gitmo. Imagine a future, 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, when the United States of America is still holding people who have been charged with no crime on a piece of land that is not part of our country. Look at the current situation, where we are force-feeding detainees who are being held on a hunger strike. I'm willing to cut the young lady who interrupted me some slack, because it's worth being passionate about. Is this who we are? Is that something our founders foresaw? Is that the America we want to leave our children?
Now, so what do we take from this? That he is telling us that, you know, we had to do what we had to do because of what was handed to him. But they were just dilly-dallying along the edges with the drones. He said, I am not sending any more troops anywhere, and I am going to use these drones for what they were used. They just weren't used for spying. They knew that in the very get-go when these drones were created.
Right.
The problem is, though, that when you get people like Code Pink, who had never been in the military, and most of these other people who had never been in the military, saying that, oh, you know, but you're killing other. When you're in a war, we are in a war. People die when you're in war.
Right.
People, innocent people, die when you're in war. But can you imagine, they were talking about this, Alecki, his 16-year-old son was killed because we killed him. This is an American who went over to the terrorists. Mm-hmm. Now, but we need to bring him back. We need to capture him and give him an American a trial. I mean, what do you think? What do you think if we had an American who went over there and joined the Panzer Division in World War II? Do you think, Eisenhower would have said, or Patton would have said, oh, no, let's capture that guy and bring him back because he's an American? They would have shot his butt on sight.
Right. Well,
I mean, so this is completely bogus. These people were talking about, well, we got to give them no such thing. They get no American shield, no American lawyer, no American justice. You go over to the other side, you die with the other side. It was as simple as that. I know I've been in the military. I was shot at, and I tell you what, if you shoot at me, I'm going to kill you. I'm not going to get you on handcuffs and bring you in and have you sit in front of a judge. That is nonsense. War, you get shot at. War, you die. Don't tell me that. That's bullshit. I don't want to hear that. That is complete crap. These people are absolutely bogus, and all they want to do is just muck the whole idea that this president has conducted a just war. Yes, everybody is saddened that there are civilian casualties. But I tell you what, I'd rather have them have the casualties than we have the casualties.
Right.
And I would also rather have, instead of dropping bombs on them like we did in Dresden,
right,
or dropping a H-bomb on them like we did in Nagasaki, we send a drone that kills three or four.
Right.
and do a little bit more targeting. Well,
and that was the reason why the drones came up with.
Yeah.
So they could target.
I think one of the there's a couple. I mean, there's so many issues that it brings up problems. Anytime hey, there's new technology, there's an issue. You know.
Oh yeah.
Your policies are always one step behind. People used to think, for instance, it was immoral to use submarines because you couldn't see them.
Right.
You know, you didn't.
Oh yeah, they said that it was immoral for submarines.
Yeah,
right.
Because you used to have the flag flying out. You know, they used to look. They thought that American revolutionaries were immoral because when faced with superior numbers, we often did what they said, going native or do as the Indians do, and we would do what they would now call kind of a terroristic means of hit and run tactics and hide in the woods and things like that. You know, so
you get
issues with any war. Things aren't catching up.
During the Second World War, Bobby's Rangers.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
But so here's one of the problems, I think, with besides the fact that the drone technology is new and people get, you know,
Korean War, I think.
Because it sounds a little bit, you know, too Terminator-ish. You know, you're just like death from a robot. Ooh, it's scary. You know, so that's one problem. But the real problem behind all of this.
Well, same thing when we started dropping bombs from airplanes.
No, yeah, true. But here's the thing. And you know, look, if you go back and look, there were plenty of people against all of that, too. I mean, you know, H.G. Wells, one of the great sci-fi thinkers of all time, and all, he was adamantly against modern warfare. Said that it was mechanized mass destruction, and he thought, he predicted everything from the tanks to the subs to the atom bomb wars, and he fought his entire life to prevent that. And he's the one who authored original the League of Nations manifest, and then the idea of the United Nations.
Who's it?
H.G. Wells.
Oh, H.G. Wells, okay.
But, you know, so, I mean, there's, you know, the people against war in general. But I think one of the problems that Obama has run into with the liberals in this current war is the fact that he inherited a, one might say, illegal or at very least immoral war and situation already underway. And he came into a terrible situation that had everything from literally declared unconstitutional indefinite detainment of people with no charges in all these black prisons everywhere, and the horrible abuses of like Edward Graves, and the running of wars like Iraq and Afghanistan, basically just on the whim of Dick Cheney and whoever else, you know, with no real legal foundations, you know, with all the cooked books of BS that they came up with and everything else. So there was so much baggage in these wars that despite the fact he's going in, cleaned it up, you know, held people accountable where he could, but tried to just extricate America from the situations with as little damage on all sides as possible. And that means damage to our economy, damage to our military, damage to our international relations. You know, if we were just going in and 2 days later pulled out, you know, it would have collapsed.
Right.
All of these Middle East, it would have, the UN people over there backing us, the NATO troops on the ground, everything would have been like going, what? You know, you can't undo a war overnight.
No.
So part of the problem is that he has been trying to fix an inherited situation. And it's an inherited situation that was extremely ugly, the longest running war in our history.
Yep.
And extremely unjust. I mean, very unjust. You've got leaders in our country, you know, Bush, Cheney, all this stuff, that have been indicted for war crimes and or under threat of indictment for war crimes in multiple nations and the UN and the international.
They can't even go overseas.
Right. So you've got a situation where the entire world had been screaming, this is illegal, immoral, and just get out, you know, stop it. And he comes in and doesn't instantly do everything. Well, that a lot of it, he got kind of backlash, if you will, from, you know, he got, you know, sewer smeared on it from the former administration was trying to clean up the mess, which is the downside of it, the unfortunate side of it. This is the guy going in, cleaning up a horrible situation and getting dirty doing so. And I think that's a large part of this, a large part of it. It isn't the fact that it's, I mean, some people are inherently against war at all. You know, all war is wrong. You should kill another human being. Think about that. Okay, I understand that.
That's fine. I don't understand that. I don't understand that because if you don't start the war, you let this guy shoot you in the eye, shoot you in the head, or shoot you in the leg.
Yeah, but see, that goes into the whole argument why some of the liberal side of things are so mad about this is that we did start these wars.
Well,
and that's the problem. People,
you're right. You're absolutely correct. We started this war. We started one half of this war.
I understand. But, again, it's one of those things where it's a big mess he's inherited, and a lot of people are angry about it and just say, get out, get out, get out, and stop all of it. But he can't. You know, he's backing out and, you know, de-escalating as much as humanly possible. And he's getting out.
Without getting impeached.
Yeah.
Without getting impeached.
He's in a horrible situation, but he's doing the best he can. It's not perfect. You know, there have been snafus along the way, like, you know, not closing Guantanamo and Republicans doing everything possible to make him look bad and to hurt him.
Well, but you see, you can't say him not closing Guantanamo. He couldn't close Guantanamo.
Right.
Because the president can't do that.
From doing it.
Right.
But, again, that just all kind of goes around and gets into the muck. And
that's because we have ignorant people
who
only see their version or what they don't know and think they know.
Right.
See, because if people understood, they would know that he could not help where he's at now.
Right.
But they don't want to know that. They don't want to know that.
Well,
they don't want to know that.
Which is, I think, why he is doing a good job coming out, being the educator chief. He didn't have to do that. But there's so much public discord over it.
Right.
That he's trying to help. He's like, hey, let me explain step by step, A, B, C, how all this works and why I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing because it can only help. Because, you know, the other side, you got to understand, half the people who never hear anything from politicians, you know, or like you said, from a president explaining the rationale behind war or whatever, they're sitting around in diners or whatever listening to these freaks go, you know, he's unleashed tornado weapons and he's killing people, you know, and he's taking my gun. They're coming, you know. When you get that, oh, I'm sorry, our phone's going off back here in the office. When that type of stuff happens, you've got a situation where he has to go out and suddenly become a teacher. He has to go, hey, people, guess what? This is how it works.
But he's doing his normal job because he is a teacher.
Well, I know.
You see, so he's in his.
It's to our benefit that
yeah,
he's a teacher.
It's to our benefit, right, absolutely. So
it's also sad that he has to do it, but he has to sit there and speak.
Well, no, I think we are great. We should be grateful that we have a teacher who's the president.
Oh, yeah.
At this time. Because we should be grateful that we had Lincoln as a sort of a teacher in his time. Because I don't think General Grant could have got it across.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
you got to remember important things in life, Mike. Here you are talking about doing the right thing, great world leaders, and the difficult decisions they have to make the world better, society better, and their absolute need to educate and help society. So they have to step up, do all of this hard work, and then explain it to people, you know, over the fireside chat so that the slow among us follow along, you know.
Well, yeah.
All of this going on, right? And on the other side, they're going to say, do you want to elect a teacher? How foreign? Who would you rather drink with?
Would you be a teacher or a hillbilly?
Well, don't you remember? It's like,
what?
It's like they would rather, you know, throw that aside, make fun of,
right,
you know, and build a faux ranch and stand in with their cowboy props in front,
right,
and go, who'd you rather have a beer with? Come on.
Yeah. Me and my 450 horses under the hood.
Yeah.
And throw some hay.
Well, that's like one of those favorite memes of mine that came out just a few weeks ago when the
they were trying to get gun legislation passed, and the Republicans were coming out so strong against it.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites was they passed, you know, Cheney, you know, came out of his crypt and fought back against it and said how, you know, it was horrible that they were trying to take guns and they were attacking the Second Amendment and blah, 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 blah. Again, this is one of those things where I was laughing so hard on the floor, I couldn't believe that they would let a guy who was the literal poster child of, I got so drunk, I blew my friend's face off at the Bird Ranch or whatever.
And all I said was, whoops.
What he actually said is one thing. It was like, remember, the police couldn't even come to him and talk to him. And he waited until the next day, and then he gave a statement and said, you know, how dare you try to arrest me or question me about it. You know, and then the guy got up, if you remember this, walked out of the ER, the emergency room, and gave a statement that he apologized
to me,
to Cheney, for embarrassing him and making a national scandal. He made the guy apologize on TV for creating a news story, for getting his face blown off.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, this is the kind of
you shouldn't have got your face in the way of that buckshot.
Yeah. So this is the kind of spokesperson they want for, you know, gun safety and Second Amendment defense. You know.
Well,
anyway, it's just ludicrous to me. So I'm glad that we have a president who's actually literate and intelligent and can speak to these issues.
Well, then just listen to this. This was Code Pink now.
Yeah.
Who is that? Who I really didn't hear much of since this president was in office, but. Why would you come out now when he's trying to give you everything that you wanted since he got into office?
Right.
Let's listen to this nut job.
So today, once again, I'm about to address it, ma'am, but you got to let me speak. I'm about to address it.
Commander-in-Chief.
Let me address it.
Close Guantanamo today.
Why don't you let me address it, ma'am?
Those 86 prisoners.
Why don't you sit down and I will tell you exactly what I'm going to do.
President at first seemingly flustered by the interruption, sort of. But nobody quite knew how it was going to end because the heckling did not stop. She stopped for a second, but then she interrupted the president again and again and again, and eventually he just let her speak.
The voice of that woman is worth paying attention to. Obviously, I do not agree with much of what she said. And obviously, she wasn't listening to me in much of what I said. But these are tough issues. And the suggestion that we can gloss over them is wrong.
Now, here's the thing. Never said anything to this man about anything first 4 years. He is now going to make a statement on, and she didn't even wait till he finished his statement, about how he wants to close Guantanamo.
Right.
And what she says is, you can get a president of the United States. You can close Guantanamo. Wrong.
Right.
He is the president who cannot close Guantanamo.
Right.
Because that is not the job of any president of the United States. He cannot do it because to open up a place like that and do clothes, a place like that. It costs money. And who controls the chest, purse strings? The Republican House. And that's what they did. They cut off the purse strings from this president because they wanted him to lay in rumble and in corrosive Guantanamo his whole campaign that he did nothing. And then she says, oh, yeah, take it away from the CIA. And you, that's what he said he was going to do. She didn't listen. He'd been wanting to take it away from the CIA for a long time, but it takes setup time. You just don't do things like that. People think that you have 200,000 troops in the place. They could be out by next week. What? Are you completely insane?
Yeah.
You got to get ships over there.
And
you got to get aircraft over there.
Yeah.
It takes 6 months to get 200,000 troops out of there. And that's if you started that day.
Look, it's taken 10 years to get all the stuff over there.
I mean, that's right. It took 10 years to get stuff over there.
Yeah,
I mean, this is completely, people don't think.
But look,
so,
and on top of that, I think, you know, part of the thing is that the left, you get this frustration that things haven't happened now, you know, immediately, as soon as he takes office. So they get all frustrated. And I think she tried to seize the moment, you know, to get a message out. But it came off wrong because, A, he's been doing everything he can.
Mm-hmm.
And on this particular issue, it's just extremely difficult. It's a lot harder than many issues that come up. You know, even like that's why we already have things like, you know, health care reform and all that passed.
Yeah.
You know, which has been taking 40
years.
Oh,
yeah, just
health care.
It only took 45 years, 65 years.
It's a lot easier issue than this thorny issue of, you know, the worst of the worst of the worst terrorists detained illegally in a off-country site and then finally forced by the courts and the Supreme Court to be brought back into some kind of oversight by the government, which they put off into a military tribunal, which nobody can touch, and then trying to close it and change it and do things. And on top of that, the Congress, run by the other party, cuts all your funding, cuts all your ability to do so, and then forbids you to transfer them anywhere in the United States,
right?
And you know, any of our allies. So then they're trying to find third world neutral off sites to kind of dump them in that nobody wants, you know. And the whole thing's a fiasco; it's a mess. But again, I think she tried to do a seize the microphone thing. But here's the part that makes me proud. I think she just was, you know, misguided to use this opportunity.
But she's ahead of Kofi.
I understand that. But, you know, they did a good job throughout for the last 10 years. I'm a fan of anybody who speaks out, and sometimes they have to resort to civil disobedience. But any of these groups that speak out and speak the truth, I'm a fan. I'm glad that they do it because I believe in freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in all this stuff. And that's why I'm so proud of what happened today, because unlike, you know, certain politicians and other parties, this man sat there. He didn't lose his cool.
Didn't lose his cool.
This lady's like screaming over him, won't let him speak.
Can you imagine if that was George Bush or Dick Cheney?
No, I mean, she would just been, you know.
They would have taken her out and shot her in the back.
or
come right off that mistake. She shouldn't have got her face in the way.
You know, Dick Cheney's good at shooting people in the face, so maybe that would have been, you know. But no, I mean, look. I was very proud. I mean, he was even trying to engage her. He,
mm-hmm.
he said, let me respond to you. Let me answer your questions and all that kind of stuff. And she didn't let it. But he let her go. He let it go the whole distance. You know, he let her talk. He tried to even engage in a dialogue.
In a dialogue. She could have talked to him.
No, but he exemplified the American spirit. He
Absolutely.
Exemplified our Constitution. He gave her public speech. He gave her the freedom of speech to say anything and to criticize the government at every level right to his face. It didn't.
And can you imagine Dick Cheney doing it? They would have made fun of her when she left the room. They would have blown her up.
They tried to get, you remember the Dixie Chicks?
Yeah. Oh.
Girls in a concert in another country, by the way, but at a concert once. Now, this is not a...
Oh, she said we talk about our government in another country.
No, but this is
but
not
he
a,
did it when he was over in another country, the president.
Setting. This is not him at the podium talking. This isn't being everybody. Just in a private venue, their own venue.
Right.
you know, people pay to be in.
Right.
They say their own piece. Like, all they said was, we're embarrassed by Bush. That's it. But that alone was enough that they tried to get them blacklisted in the whole
right. Industry.
They tried to get all their concerts canceled, all of their records.
All the distributors on television. Right.
Let's destroy all the CDs and everything at radio stations nationwide. Then they were threatening them. And they even threatened their grandparents, you know, I mean, with, like, attacks and stuff. Are you kidding me? I mean, that was nothing. Could you imagine someone standing up in front of Dick Cheney doing this to him?
Oh, forget it.
Talk about Guantanamo.
They would have been in Guantanamo. That's right. Well, here's another thing with the
Welcome
president.
Welcome to an amusement ride. We
yes.
call the water board.
Yeah, here's another thing that he said. Yeah, he goes, I got grabbed by foot. Okay, let's get it.
I know the politics are hard, but history will cast a harsh judgment on this aspect of our fight against terrorism and those of us who failed to end it. Imagine a future, 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, when the United States of America is still holding people who have been charged with no crime on a piece of land that is not part of our country. Look at the current situation, where we are force-feeding detainees who are being held on a hunger strike. I'm willing to cut the young lady who interrupted me some slack, because it's worth being passionate about. Is this who we are? Is that something our founders foresaw? Is that the America we want to leave our children?
That's the America we want to leave our children.
Is that the America we want to leave our children?
See, that's awesome. I love it. I love that he just stood right there and just went, you know, proud of our Constitution, proud of our founders' vision, and I'm supporting it all the way. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I let her say her piece. That's just that's.
And he let her say her piece.
Cool. What a great.
He let her say her piece.
Yeah.
Now, I can't see anybody in the Cheney. Bush administration, no, it's the Cheney Bush administration,
yeah.
That would allow that to go on that long.
You remember when Cheney even got criticized once by a senator, and he told him to go F yourself in the middle of the Senate chamber? I mean, this is how
who did he tell that to? Was that, was that what's his name? That was the speaker.
Wasn't
he told that to the speaker from, the, you know, from Leavenworth. Democratic speaker.
Well,
not the speaker, the Democratic majority leader.
Majority, yeah.
Yeah.
But, so here's something I don't know if you want to get into yet or not. But.
Well, because I want to play a couple more things here from him.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Obama, but see, these are some of the things.
But see, I like the fact that he respects a common American citizen. This is more proof, as a matter of fact, that he's not the dictator. He's not the great overlord, you know, that they all claim, you know, the communist, fascist, secret Islamic dictator that they claim he is. Because if he were a dictator, a couple of things about what just happened. One, he could have closed Guantanamo at any time. He could have built 50 Guantanamos at any time. He could do anything he wants. He's a dictator. He's a king, right?
That's right. Why can't he do that if he's a king?
The problem he's been having for 6 years.
He's not a king.
He's being blocked, right. He's a president. So that's proof right there. Secondly, this woman would have never in a billion years been allowed to say or do anything that she just did and still be alive. Or
she wouldn't have been. She wouldn't have been allowed to even go into the meeting where he was at.
Look. It's more proof of a functional democracy and of a true open democracy.
Yeah, here's something that the president talks about.
Our commitment to constitutional principles has weathered every war. And every war has come to an end. We must define the nature and scope of this struggle, or else it will define us. We have to be mindful of James Madison's warning that no nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. we must define our effort not as a boundless global war on terror, but rather as a series of persistent, targeted efforts to dismantle specific networks of violent extremists that threaten America. A perpetual war through drones or special forces or troop deployments will prove self-defeating and alter our country in troubling ways. Our systematic effort to dismantle terrorist organizations must continue. But this war, like all wars, must end. That's what history advises. That's what our democracy demands. Given my administration's relentless pursuit of al-Qaeda's leadership, there is no justification beyond politics for Congress to prevent us from closing a facility that it should have never been opened. Today, I once again call on Congress to lift the restrictions on detainee transfers from Gitmo. Imagine a future, 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, when the United States of America is still holding people who have been charged with no crime on a piece of land that is not part of our country. Look at the current situation, where we are force-feeding detainees who are being held on a hunger strike. I'm willing to cut the young lady who interrupted me some slack, because it's worth being passionate about.
No, it is important stuff. And, you know, what are people going to say about us when we're still holding people that aren't guilty? 40 years from now.
Like you said, cut them slack. I don't mind code pinking them. I know that there's a whole segment.
I understand cutting people slack. But I want somebody who's speaking to know what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah.
She doesn't know what she's talking about, and she's the head of code pink.
Well, and also just not to be.
So all that rhetoric that she said, she didn't say one single thing that was the truth.
Or just like, what is the solution? You know, I mean, if you...
Right, okay, yeah, well, yeah, for all that, I don't care if she had a solution. If she, and he's correct, we want people to say this to anybody, to say it to a president. Yes, that's true. But make sure you know what you're talking about. She said the president can close Guantanamo tomorrow. Wrong. The president... what else did she say about the president could he should pay restitution to all the families over there. And what's he gonna take out of his pocket?
Right.
And don't work. Why do we kill a 16-year-old? And we weren't aiming for the 16-year-old. He was collateral damage because the man we wanted to get was hiding between his own child, so he thought we wouldn't hit him. I mean, come on.
I mean, this is one of the problems of modern urban warfare.
That's right. That's what it is. Well, modern urban warfare,
they
hide amongst the people.
They hide in neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
That's part of the horrors of modern
warfare. And they said, well, they're not going to kill us because we have all these people. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. If we can't get you, capture you, and bring you in, we're going to kill you and everybody you're with. And, you know, I just don't have the sympathy for it because... war is hell. Now, I want to get to this clown Cruz because he is in one of the three green churches. But there's one, and I'm going to save this for the last part. But go ahead, you had something.
Yeah, I want to point this out real quick because we got a minute.
Yeah,
this goes directly to that. Just like I get tired of the Republicans playing this game. They like to do things. For instance, like cut funding to Guantanamo and pass a law forbidding the president from transferring any prisoner to a prison in America and things like that. And then go, why haven't you done something? You know, they play this getcha game where they create a problem and then they say, well, why haven't you solved the problem? But these things have real consequences. And just like cutting funding to the embassies and the security staffs, upset embassies helped create the problem that Benghazi erupted in. We have now, we just lost, everybody's seen the news, Washington State had a catastrophic failure of a bridge.
Now, it was caused, as in a truck hit one of the pylons and it collapsed that segment. Okay, but
that
the bridge had already been declared unfit. It's already behind. And
twice.
Okay. We've been talking about this forever, I mean, for decades. But Obama, since when, his very first things on his agenda, very first times, he said, let's reinvest in the infrastructure. You remember one of his big pushes was, he said, let's put high-speed rails across the country. And then he specifically said, let's rebuild the bridges and do all this kind of stuff.
Bridges and tunnels.
Every year they've denied him. Again, this is the he's not a dictator. He's a president. He's asked for this. Every year they've cut the funding for it, and they've refused to fund it because it's a way to go give him nothing. Because, you know, it would also have the side benefit of job growth. You know, if you had a whole bunch of people out there working, repairing bridges and rebuilding roads and putting in new high-speed rails and all, there'd be a lot of people working in America. But
there'd be a lot of people voting for him.
It just pissed me off. He said he's asked for every year, over and over and over. Just March 29th of this year, he has $21 billion just to repair our roads and bridges in America. And he asked for, and they said Boehner replied in usual snide remarks as usual, laughed out loud at him and said, oh, yeah, it's easy to go out there and be Santa Claus with your bag full of gifts for everybody and tell everybody that you're just going to give things away and all that. But, you know, somebody has to be the adult in the room and, you know, shut him down. I mean, look. And then, you know, here we go with people dying. You know, again, another bridge. We've had like 10 bridges collapse in the last couple of years. These people are just asses, and it has real consequences. And it's one thing to get a political score and say, ha, 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 we didn't let him get his jobs bill all the way through, or we didn't let him build a high-speed rail between here and New York, ha, ha, ha. You know, it's not just a game, and it's not just that he didn't get a good job percentage growth that year and make him look better in the history books. It's that people will die and that our roads are collapsing and our country is crumbling. And it's simply un-American to not invest in yourself. I mean, you want to talk about the great enemies, you know, Russia and China and all these kind of things. They couldn't have dreamed up a better scenario when your own political parties are fighting against themselves and blocking the construction and rebuilding of your own country. Are you kidding me? That's like a wet dream for a foreign nation. So I just don't get it. And I wish that they would hold these people accountable because, I mean, this is him. Even they blocked him every year. But even just, you know, a month or so ago, sitting here laughing at the president, calling him Santa Claus because he was begging for money to rebuild the bridges, which are collapsing on our TVs right now today. You know, so. It just makes me mad.
Well, what's going to happen if one of those bridges collapses with one of those congressmen crossing?
Yeah. Well, unless he can wide stance and reach both sides at the same time.
Right. That's true.
Yeah,
I forgot.
It's going to be a tragedy.
Wide stance.
Mr. Airport Security.
Yeah. He could do that. That's true.
But but see, again, it's going to take, you know, some – a Republican icon or something dying before they'll act? Is that, I mean, is that how, you know, greeting assessment?
Maybe not even then.
It's all about, you know.
Maybe not even then. Yeah. Well, it did take Reagan getting shot for them to pass the Brady Bill.
Yeah, that's true. But see, again, and that was something that made me mad, too. There was a little meme going around on Facebook the other day. It said they are still holding investigations, still demanding resignations and the, you know, impeachment, if possible, of the president for Benghazi Gate, where we lost, you know, I think four guards or four Marines or something. Just since the shooting of all those children, we've now passed over 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
20,000 dead from gun violence, and they blocked any kind of legislation. And not even like take your guns away and lock them all up. I'm talking about legislation like you can't have a machine gun. You know, I mean, just sensible stuff.
I mean, it's so ludicrous.
Even like you're talking about the Brady Bill, it was already a law, and it was proved to work, and then they let it lapse. They won't even allow it to be reinstated. It's nothing new. And this was a Republican response to a Republican shooting of a Republican president. So, again, why is this even an issue? But because it's Obama in office, we can't even talk about it. Oh, no.
Can't live, none of that works.
We can't
work.
Build a bridge, and we can't quit shooting.
I mean, you know, a bridge that will help people, mm-hmm. get more people to work, it's not a giveaway program. If we need it,
I think
it's just like if we need 400 more aircraft, they pass the money and get the 400 aircraft because we need to get those fighters in the air. But we don't need to get across the river?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand that. We don't need to get across the river?
A million times.
We don't need to, get on a train and go from point A to point B. We don't need to get on a road in a car and go from point A to point B.
Yeah.
If there's no road. I don't understand that.
Right.
How can they say that that's a giveaway?
I know. And it's an investment in the country. And
suppose it. Now, let's see, what they said. Where are they going to get the money? If you guys said, where can we get the money to build those shelters in Oklahoma? Oh, I think I know FEMA.
Yeah.
Because FEMA built that shelter in that small little town in Oklahoma that I was telling you about. They coughed up the money for it.
I'll tell you another one, even more direct. Our illustrious leaders, the Bushes, the Cheneys. You remember Cheney caused a huge ruckus in D.C., building that massive underground compound, became fodder for late-night TV jokes and everything else. But all the neighborhoods around there were banned out because day and night, they were blasting and building up vast underground chambers, all paid for by the taxpayers, by the way, because, we were color-coded rainbow terror watching or whatever. So, we can afford it all day long. And if it's good enough to build the Cheneys, an impervious storm cellar, bomb cellar thing, then you can build it for children too, right? If it's good for one.
No,
it's
can't
good
build for children.
So
good
I'm
children.
Pretty sure that the threat of an F4 tornado is equal to or more dangerous than the threat of a terror.
No, because Darth Vader has to live.
Well, look.
There'll never be another Darth Vader.
Sometimes in America priorities, tornadoes hit every year, and they do massive amounts of damage. Look at this thing. It wiped out, eradicated some towns, right? We declared a weapon of mass destruction, the bombers at the Marathon in Boston. Those dudes, to be blunt, broke some windows and injured several people pretty severely. But that's it, okay? You didn't eradicate Boston.
Well, and that's the president was saying. We need to differentiate between terrorists and would-be wannabe terrorists.
Well, yeah.
Because our thugs don't make you, if you're a thug, that'll make you a terrorist.
Right. And that's one.
If you're a moron, that'll make you a terrorist.
Yeah, and we could invest realistically in things because investing in, say, prevention of catastrophic loss from tornadoes and all that, it's a worthwhile thing.
Absolutely.
We know it happens. It happens every single freaking year.
Concerned, the federal government shouldn't be paying for nothing that you have.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you
you keep building right there,
right,
and we're not going to help you, they said, no, your city's not going to help you. Well, you know what? We ain't paying off.
Yeah.
FEMA ain't coming in there.
And see, this also gets back to one of those issues of, difference in governing. For instance, I'm from Mississippi. When I was growing up in Mississippi, they'd had some catastrophic floods and stuff in the past. Okay, so we moved to Jackson. They had a Pearl River flood there. Pearl River flows through Jackson in the past. Well, I remember when we first moved there, there was a whole swath around the Pearl River and everything. You could drive downtown, everything else on it. Nothing there. It was bare right through the middle of town. And they forbid it.
The flood went. Yeah.
They forbid it. It was strictly forbid. Well, we got this new mayor in. They got a new county commander. They got a new governor. All this kind of stuff. They changed the laws. And said, well, it's a detriment to economic investment. We should be allowed to just let corporations do anything, blah, blah, blah. Change the law, build whole things like that. When I was about high school, one of the great jobs that my brother and I got, they had a massive flood, flooded all these homes, destroyed all this property. And we got to go in and get paid, $20 an hour or whatever it all to, if we were teenagers, but to help pick up the damaged, destroyed, horrible remains of homes for people, and haul them off to the dump. And they laugh all the way to the bank. They think it's hysterical because, hey, that was good for economic growth. Look at all what the realtors made. But it is ignorant. It's ignorant
to allow people to be put in. You know, that's where federal government has a good role. Mm-hmm. They should have forbidden it and blocked it in the end. You don't, you know, if you build, you know, a house in the middle of a river, you're going to drown. I mean, the end. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, so, I mean, why are we having this debate?
If you're building your house in the middle of the jungle and, you know, King Kong lives on the other side, what do you want when he's hungry?
Right. And, but that, you know,
give me a break.
We don't want too much government regulation.
Yeah.
Some government regulation is sensible. I mean, come on.
Well, there's one other thing I need to play for the president here, and I need to make a comment on this. So, well, let's listen to this here.
You are commander-in-chief. You can close Guantanamo today.
Why don't you let me address it, ma'am? We will insist that judicial review be available for every detainee. Now, ma'am, let me finish. Let me finish, ma'am. Now, this is part of free speech, is you being able to speak, but also you listening, and me being able to speak. All right? Our victory against terrorism won't be measured in a surrender ceremony at a battleship or a statue being pulled to the ground. Victory will be measured in parents taking their kids to school, immigrants coming to our shores, fans taking in a ball game, a veteran starting a business, a bustling city street, a citizen shouting your concerns at a president.
And what I'd like to add to that is that we have, before this president, the last two terms of the Cheney Bush administration, we were given false ideals what victory would be like.
You mean like a gigantic banner on a battleship?
Like a gigantic flag, a gigantic banner on a battleship saying
mission accomplished.
We were given this as the truth that we won. And that's not a victory. As the president said, a victory is when we can go to our ball games, where we can go and stand by and watch a parade come down the street, and we can go to a movie theater. We can go and not worry about our children getting shot in a theater. These are the purposes of what victory is. Nothing else. Not things that we thought of that might sound nice. The shooting has stopped. If we're still shooting, if we got soldiers anywhere in this world, it's not victory. When you have to go to, when you can go to a parade and not have to be worried about getting blown up in the parade, when you send your kids to school and not have to worry about them getting shot because people are too ignorant to say, you know what, you don't need to have an AK-47 or a gun that has 30 clips to a round to kill Bambi. We don't need any of those things. That's what victory is. Victory is when we can have the peace of mind of having peace of mind and not having to worry about if our kids are going to come home on the school bus to meet us, or where we can take a date or a wife out to a movie theater and knowing we'll live to see the end of the movie.
Right. Like you can enjoy life, not fear life.
Victory. We have I think we have a guest calling in here right now, and I think the people need to hear her before it's late.
Michael, I did. I got in right under the wire. I apologize. But here I am. Yes.
Who are your offices in the 8th District now?
Okay, I am the chair. My first vice, our first vice, is Antonio Blue.
Very good.
Isn't that wonderful? Second is Diane Little from Union County. The third is Dylan Frick, who is a young Dem, and he is from Stanley. The secretary is Rona Bowers from Cabarrus. And our treasurer is Doug McMillan from Robeson County. So we have a really, really good representation. Excellent.
Well, I had your chairs, and we have about 2 minutes left. But what I suggested to them was that I would like to see, because, you know, one thing, well, we have a lot of elected officials that just run amok. They don't care about the party. They care about themselves getting elected. And I would like to see, if at all possible, and this is going to be very difficult on you guys as the chairs, but to have, when the 8th District is having an affair or a fundraiser, I'd like to see the 9th District and the 12th District pitch in and help them with their event. And when the 9th
District
have, I'd like to see vice versa. I know these elected officials will have a major problem with that, but it's not about the elected officials. It's about the state, winning the state and getting the party, because if the party is doing good, they will get elected.
Yeah, absolutely correct, and that is what we're going to be working towards. I can tell you I can tell you that is it's a new day, and it's time for us to be pulling together and not apart. Absolutely.
Well, the chair was on, and he had he said he likes everybody. He likes you guys. He wants to work with you guys. And he is there's a lot of elected officials that don't really care but how he operates. But you know what? As far as I've said, too bad about that.
Yeah. Okay. That Joe is phone going off right now. So.
Yes.
But anyway, I apologize, but next week I'll come on and stay a little bit longer, if that's okay with you.
Because we want to hear about everything. We didn't have a chance to play old Ted Cruz and his clowns, where he says he hates the Republicans. You know, that they're having a real fight.
Raleigh and Tillis.
Oh, yeah.
Raleigh, absolutely. Yeah.
Cruz, too. So,
you're talking about the national level.
Right. So let me tell you.
Swift told us the two fictional lands, Lilliput and Blefuscu, that had been at war for years over which end of the egg to open first. In Lilliput, they opened the big egg, and in Blefuscu, they opened the small end of the egg. And the big enders and little enders battled endlessly. Isn't it true that the people that the conferees would be held with on the other side of the Capitol happen to be a majority of our party? Well, so we don't trust the majority party on the other side of the aisle to come to conference and not hold to the fiscal discipline that we want to see happen. Isn't that a little bit bizarre?
Yeah.
So let's get on with the process.
Your senator from Arizona urged this body to trust the Republicans. Let me be clear, I don't trust the Republicans. And I don't trust the Democrats.
The guy you really should talk to.
Don't trust Republicans.
All right, we'll see you. I'll talk to you next week. But I'm going to call you off your air because I got to talk to you about something else, okay?
Okay.
All right, bye.
Thanks, everybody. It's time to say goodbye for this week. And remember, If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it'd eat a giraffe.
I don't think so.
All right, baby. Bye-bye.